Welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Vin here, folks. It is, in fact, the 8th of the 11th, 2015 AD. And my guest tonight, as many of you know, is Ben Gilroy. Before we get to Ben, I just want to go through one or two little things with you. Again, Genie has a little blue book in his hand again. Yes, he does. Why? Here's why. This little blue book, folks, it keeps getting attention in the newspapers, but in the wrong way. They mention it for things that, you know, they kind of know they have to, but they don't mention it for other things. They're very selective, you see, when they're talking about this little blue constitution. Particularly Article 40.5. it's like garlic to a vampire, this little thing. Article 40.5 simply has the dwelling of every citizen is inviolable and shall not be forcibly entered save in accordance with the law. Why am I mentioning it yet again? Well, there was an article recently, as I'm sure many of you know, and they were talking about asylum seekers. And they say, well, the Gardaí aren't allowed smash in, effectively, into an asylum seeker's dwelling. His private dwelling, I think, was the phrase they used. And, you know, well, we know that, right? We know that. But why do we know that? We know that because your dwelling is your dwelling is your dwelling. And that is sacrosanct. And they know it. And they know it. So why are they not mentioning it for evictions? There's lots of other groups out there trying to help people. And I appreciate all their efforts. I really do. And we support their efforts. We've had loads of them on People's Internet Radio over the last few years, to interview them and to, you know, encourage other people to get involved, and, you know, the likes of the Hub and the Land League and the New Land League and the Anti-Eviction Task Force. There was loads of them out there. And any new ones that are forming tomorrow, yeah, by all means, get in touch if you want an interview. We're happy to have you on. But why aren't you telling me, why are they not telling people about Article 40.5 and its significance? And here is its significance. Don't open the door. Do not open the door. They cannot evict you, at least in Ireland anyway. I think it's the same elsewhere, but definitely in Ireland. If you don't open the door, they can't smash in. If they do, you have recourse. People will say, oh, they just break in anyway. Well, so let them. So what? Let them. So they break in. Great. Now, just like the asylum seeker, you have recourse. Under their rules. Remember, this is their rules. This is not your rules. These are not our rules. These are the rules we gave to them. In other words, we gave them this. Supposedly, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, maybe you feel, well, I didn't sign it in. Sure, sure. Either way, those who believe are operating in accordance with this, they believe and accept that these are their rules. I don't think any of them would deny that, right? Let's apply a bit of logic and reason here. No one operating within the boundaries, as it were, within the bounds of this, claims they can do anything outside of it. Well, fine. Okay, fine. And they believe, you and I and everyone else, gave this to them. It's right there in the preamble at the beginning. You can read it. It's fairly simple English, mostly. So, if they smash in anyway, you have recourse. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. I keep thinking of that family, the man and woman and the young boy who were evicted. And the man was blind, I believe, or what's the term? Is the term medically blind? I don't know how blind. You know, there's degrees. So I don't know how blind he was. Nonetheless, he was classified as blind in the newspapers. And his wife and their young son, they were evicted physically. They were picked up and removed from their home Even though I know they opened the door, they shouldn't have opened the door, but apparently they did. Apparently they did. I withdraw that. I can't say for definite. But apparently they opened the door and they were physically removed. Now, here's the thing. Whoever physically removed them committed a violation because they know that was their private dwelling and they're not supposed to do that. But they even compounded it. They even made it worse because while there may have been an order, a possession order, in fact, is what they are, while there may have been an order to evict Mr. and Mrs., there was no order to evict that young boy from that dwelling. And he was lifted, apparently, and removed physically. Now, apparently, members of An Garda Síochána Síochána were present for all of that. So, even if you want to say, well, his mother and father, then they were evicted or possessed correctly, repossessed, you know. But he wasn't. And if this doesn't give them permission to do that, and if the court didn't give them permission to do that, they did not then do that in accordance with this. And if they didn't do that in accordance with this, then it can be undone. And that young boy can go back into that dwelling, and because he's a young boy underage, he can invite his mother and his father back in there. Well, that's hardly an answer now, is it? Huh? I can hear the skeptics. That's hardly an answer. People can't be expecting to get houses for free. Who said that? I never said they should get it for free. Nothing is free. And yet, everything's free. Contradiction, right? It's not really. What did your life cost you? How much was your life? I mean, what did it cost you to get here? How much did you pay to get here, to be born? How much did you pay? Who did you pay? Exactly. Your life was freely given to you, if you will, or it freely came to whatever you are. You arrived, okay? Some in style, some not so, not in so much style, right? But you're here. We are here, wherever here is. There's nobody to pay. Now, finance is different. According to this, I'm going to dig it up for you here. I'm going to tell you what, according to these people who claim to be bound by this, this one I'm going to tell you, to me, is quite strange. And I'll tell you why this is strange. And what I'm looking for here, and I did have it marked, but my mark fell out. So I'm having to go through it again. And this is taking way too long. typical. No, I've passed it, have I? I've passed it. Bloody hell. Did the page fall out? Sorry, there's a couple of loose pages, as you can see. Oh, don't worry about it. I'll wing it. Essentially, in there, it defines treason, what treason is. Now, the funny thing about the definition of treason that they use in there, if one were to examine it, I think correctly, with a logical mind, I think it would be very easy to make a case that anybody operating from there who is borrowing money at interest on behalf of the state with usury involved, because eventually it's a mathematical certainty that we cannot pay it back, and therefore we lose our sovereign assets, according to them, your oil, your fish, your gas, your minerals, etc., etc. I think you could construe that, and I think even they, some of them would construe, if you were doing it anyway, they could construe that you were somehow committing treason or a treasonous act against what they call the state. I think that could be 34-3, is it? That's, somebody says 34-3. I didn't think that's what it was. 34-3. No, I think 34-3 was the one I wanted to talk about in a different regard. Yes. But, oh, yes, no, 34-3 was something else, but I will get to 34-3 in a minute. Thank you very much. Oh, you won't for reminding me in the chat box there. We were talking about this at the meetup earlier on today. So, is there a case for treason? Now, if there is, whose feet would you lay that case of treason in front of? I would suggest, quite possibly, if it can be proven, Minister for Finance, probably. Perhaps even Minister for Justice, maybe. Whoever the office holder happens to be, or was maybe, not sure, depending on how far back I suppose you want to go. But I certainly think, who doesn't think at the moment we have been betrayed? Who doesn't think that? I mean, look what's happening in your country right now, folks. Is there not treason afoot? Bloody well feels like it, if you ask me. Okay, a couple of things I wanted to go through. A couple of newspaper articles just before I get to Ben. He should be on the line there. In fact, he's in the chat box. Good man, Ben. Excellent. He's early. Great response to that video, by the way. I put up a little video advertising tonight that Ben Gilroy was going to come on. And over, I think last time I checked, I'll tell you now again. Yeah, wow. 1,300... What's that? No, it's more. Wow. Bloody hell. 1,396 views on Facebook and another view here and there. That's an incredible response. I think I'll do that in future, advertise who's coming on. But I'll put this link in the chat for you folks. That's a brilliant little article there by the guys at Awake in Longford. Do have a read of that article while we're doing our thing here. Now, another little one I wanted to get to before I bring Ben on. Ben may or may not want to comment on this one. This is another little story. I'm going to copy and put the link into the chat box for you as well. Have a look at that one. That was in the Sun, folks, right? For anybody who doesn't click the link. He wrecked my house, invaded my home, and now he's suing me, my Graham. And this was Father's Fury over Brazen Burglar. So a burglar broke in. A very well-known burglar, apparently, known to the police, etc. And seemingly somebody blasted them. I'm assuming from where they're at, that's probably a shotgun blast. They didn't say shot blast. They usually mean shotgun, I think, when they say that. So somebody took a pot shot, and now they're being sued. And again, I asked the question, because where in here does it say that the average man or woman cannot have arms at home to protect their dwelling? Nowhere in here. It doesn't say you can, but it doesn't say you can't. But it does say the citizens have the right to gather without arms. Now, if you have the right to gather peacefully without arms, well, then logic must dictate somewhere, maybe if you're not gathered privately, you're entitled to have arms. Just an interesting little one, I thought. I'd chuck it in there for you. Maybe people want to talk about that, maybe discuss it. I don't know. I thought it was a little interesting one. Here's another one. Again, this one is bizarre and crazy, and who knows what to make of this. Have a look at that one, folks. This one is, I'll just put it into the chat box there for everybody to have a look at. It'll take us 43 years to fill all the empty houses in Ireland. So remember that building boom that I was telling you about, that me and all of my friends and probably half of you guys were all busy, you know, working away. It will take 43 years to fill all those homes that we thought, hey, isn't this great? Correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the likes of Eddie Hobbs and all the talking heads on media, mainstream and otherwise, weren't they all saying, oh, it's brilliant, this building boom in Ireland, it's marvellous. In fact, the only guy, in fairness to him, who said this is crazy was David McWilliams. He was the only one who said you cannot base an economy on the price of your own bloody houses within that economy, even if it is expanding. It's bonkers. It's ludicrous. And he was right, of course. He was absolutely right. 200,000 homes may need to be bulldozed. And that's dated 2012. 200 homes. 200,000 homes may need to be bulldozed. 2012, that was dated. Now, how it stands now, I don't know. But it begs the question. Back then in 2012, which is only a few years ago, many of us were, I think, still, you know, going hell for leather. Wasn't any recession in some businesses, there was in others. But they're talking about bulldozing these homes. Now, I'm going to say something about that. They're our homes. They belong to us, we the people, not the banks. The banks apparently now belong to us. Somehow we've managed to absorb the sovereign debt somehow. Don't know how. It begs the question, why did Mick Wallace and... what's her name? Somebody remind me of her name, who were trying to do the inspect... Claire Daly. Why was it that Mick Wallace and Claire Daly couldn't get in to examine the aircraft in Shannon? And somebody said something today at the meetup about a movie that we should all watch. I believe it was J. Maxey. A little bit of credit to J. Maxey. I always like to give credit where it's due. And he said, there's a new movie out, Finn, with Tom Hanks in it. And they're talking about this and that and Berlin and East Germany and West Germany and all of that jazz. And at some stage, somebody said something along the lines of, well, why don't we just talk to them about this? And it turns out, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to having a look at it. It turns out the response was, they're not a sovereign nation. We don't have to worry about that. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, these diplomats and foreign, you know, these the Foreign Office people in most nations, I would imagine, they are aware that what's known as the 26-county Republic of Ireland can't possibly be a sovereign entity, and they know it. And that's why they weren't allowed to inspect those aircraft in Shannon. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. So, yeah, I thought I'd just chuck that in there, and I'm going to go get Ben now. There was one or two other things I think I wanted to just chuck in for you to have a look. That was Irish Times. Yeah, I have a few articles there in dealing with the session. We'll get to them in a moment. Ben will probably want to talk a little about some of that. So I'm going to do that now, folks. I'm going to put on a tune for you, and I'll go and dig up. I'll go and fetch Ben Gilroy and get him on. And we'll stick a little of this on until we do that. Here we go. And welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. That was, of course, the one and only Graceland. Or, well, if you're referring to Ireland, somebody in the chat box has given it a better description. Paul Simon, Disgraceland. And that's probably more accurate. We should have Ben Gilroy on the blower. Ben, can you hear me okay?
Hi, Ben. Can I hear you great?
Excellent. You're coming through loud and clear. Do you want to come on camera, or what way do you want to do this?
Sure, let's try that and see how we look. How about okay. The hairbrush now?
There you go. I see you looking all schmooed with the glasses and intelligent. You only look intelligent.
The eyesight has taken a toll, Ben, and I need glasses when I'm up close on screens and stuff.
All right, there you go. And what I'll do is I'll send you the video feed over this, so you should be able to... Now, you should be able to see me and you as well, yeah?
Ah, yeah, that's great.
I have you a bit of a strange angle. Let me just tilt that down a little bit. There we go.
Yeah.
So.
See, you got used to using the program.
About time, isn't it? So, where do we start? With Ben Gilroy. Right, we haven't had you on in a while. Let's not get it. Oh, first and foremost, yeah, that little video promo that we put out went all over the place. And I saw you had a comment on it saying that if people want to call in, be they supporters or detractors. So first and foremost, I'm going to give out the phone number. It's a Dublin phone number, folks. 01-44-333-09. If you want to call in, question, remark, whatever, you'll take anything on, Ben, right?
Sure, yeah, and we be nice to people, you know, as I said on the
yeah, Ben will be nice there. To you.
Yeah, we'll welcome people who oppose us or agree with us. It makes no difference. Bring them on. Have a talk.
Absolutely. We'll take all.
They might enlighten us that we're wrong and vice versa, you know.
But we'll
never say we're right.
Exactly. And if you want to call in over Skype, folks, Vincent Tempone, V-I-N-C-E-N-T-T-E-M-P, and a digit 1 if you want to add me on Skype, and you can come in that way too. If you haven't got a euro to call us and you want us to call you, find some way of texting us your number. We'll keep it private and we'll call you. How's that? Can't say any fairer than that, can you? Right, so what's happening, Ben? Now let's get into it.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot happening. I mean, you're probably aware of the big court case we had there with the McPhillips and the receivers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that went quite well for us. It wasn't our intent to cause the banks, you know, huge
not.
Money.
Of course not.
And, no, well, in serious, like, I mean, I
Okay, try say that again with a straight face.
We're on camera now. I'm trying to say it with a straight face. No, in genuine, we went for meetings with these people, and we said to them that, you know, we're just trying to get a deal done.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, the comment from the solicitor was, are you a solicitor? And I pointed out the deeds were invalid. I said, no, I wasn't a dentist either, but I knew I had a toothache.
Exactly.
And it went from there.
So yeah, I'm no hairdresser, but I know I'm bald, right?
So that ended in a disaster in the High Court for them. It was an 11-day trial.
Okay, well, maybe give us the reason. What was the reason you said that's invalid? What was the reason?
Okay, well, when a receiver is appointed, the law is very clear on it. From all good commentators on law to do with receiverships in the common law world, and they all agree that strict compliance to the debenture document is required. So yep. This debenture document in particular required for it to be done underhand rather than under seal. They done it under seal, and it's as simple as that, folks. I mean, sometimes the law's an ass. As I said to Stephen Tennant, I said, really, you know, if you agree in contract that a receiver can come in if you default, what difference does it make if you were underhand, under seal, or by carrier pigeon? But the law's the law. That's how it works.
What's the phrase? To the letter.
To the letter, that's it. The absolute letter of law.
I mean, they hold us to the so-called letter of the law regularly, so...
Yeah, well, I learned it from them, didn't I?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's not a... No, but I mean, you know, you'd hear people criticise that idea every now and again, and I say, well, look... You're not using the law or the legal system against them. You're using it for the people. In other words, in favour of we the people. And, I mean, I keep saying to people, that's what this whole thing was all about. Yeah. This, supposedly, the reason we gave this to ourselves in the preamble, justice, charity, fairness, you know, what's it? Due observance of prudence, justice, and charity so that the dignity and freedom of the individual may be assured. Well, okay. I'll accept that, Ben.
Hey, what more do you want?
No complaints from me.
Yeah, so we have a few more in the horizon, similar type cases with receivers.
Mm.
So if they're listening, I suggest they maybe do the deals this time.
Be nice if they did just once. Is that what's happening, though? Is it a case that they're just sending in, I don't know, green solicitors straight out of tech? They don't, you know, they've just qualified and... Or are they just so used to getting questioned about anything significant? So are they just used to rubber stamping stuff and just plowing through it? Or
I think they're used to dealing with what they refer to as lay litigants. Most of them probably aren't too well up on law, so I guess that it's easy fodder for them.
Right.
So they tend to treat everybody with the same disrespect, if you like.
Yeah.
And they just got a shock this time, but it wasn't a trainee solicitor. I mean, the guy won't mind me mentioning him. It's Hugh Kane from Kane Toohey Solicitors.
Okay. And did he get a surprise, or pleasantly surprised, perhaps?
Well, I think he was educated in the court about conveyancing law and receivership. He didn't actually know, and his senior counsel got a good lesson in it too. It was interesting because they had quite a big team in the court. They had 3 solicitors at the front, including Hugh Kane, and they had a senior counsel, junior counsel, and the whole of Grant Thornton team in the court.
But that surely has to sting when it happens. Like, you know, I mean,
that's Akron and Stanley playing Man United. But the funny thing about it was when we started, Paul McPhillips, in fairness to him, he'll tell you honestly, he doesn't know much about the law, right? But what I liked about him is he's a ballsy little guy, and he'll do exactly as he's told, no matter what it is, which I loved, you know? So the barrister, senior counsel, Bernard Dunleavy, I like him, you know, he's a gent, you know? And when he started off in his typical fashion, because he is a gent, you know, he said that he wanted to put on record that we were lay litigants, and as such, if we withdrew the case, that he wouldn't, we wouldn't incur any legal costs, and that was really his advice for us, you know.
Right, offering
the So the judge put that to us, and Paul McPhillip says to me, "What'll I do?" I just said, "Offer the same thing back if they pull out now." Now remember, they had a huge big
deal in the
court.
I like that.
Well, the judge liked it, you know, and in fairness to him, because Dunleavy then kind of had his nose put out of joint by that, you know. So Paul just said, "Look, you know, I'll offer the same thing back, as he says the legal fee is going to be huge, so if they pull out now, they won't incur them." So,
because you can. A lot of people don't know that. You can.
Oh, you can, yeah. So when the judge, so Dunleavy said to the judge, "Look, no, he said, I won't accept that." Right. The judge just said to him, "Mr. Dunleavy, you have to take instructions on that."
Interesting.
So you had to turn to the solicitors, and
they were present. They were present, though, yeah.
Oh, they were.
They were present, right? Fine. No, because that's interesting. That come up today at the meetup again. Apparently, can't see how they could do it here, but apparently in England, they're trying to do away with the very idea of a lay litigants coming anywhere near the court. Now they might be able to get away with it there because they're. The people are deemed subjects, but we're not. Whether we know it or not, but we're not deemed subjects by them, right?
And we have a right to access to the courts.
And again,
well,
it's so. In here, yeah. Whereas,
yeah.
That exists, folks. If you're
that's
England,
the only constitution they have over there as well, isn't it?
That's good for them. I, as far as I'm concerned, that's good for them over there, you know. But, but you know, it would be interesting if somebody would try bring it in with them, wouldn't it?
I know, yeah.
Just hold her up and wave it. So I'll have a go at this. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that came up today as well, and I'm going to fire this at you as well because I think it's important that people get this information. What we were talking about today at the meetup was, the idea came up, Ben. You see, people are going into courts, they don't know what's going on, they don't know the structure, they don't know how to go about it. So we thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if there was somehow a diagram put up somewhere saying, like, okay, you start here, and if you go in, did you win? Yes, go that way. Did you lose? Go that way. You know, what do you do? Appeal. What do you need? You need an affidavit, this, you need that, you need the other. Where do you send them? You send that to this guy, that to that. And like a flow chart, you know, like a computer or an electrician's chart, you know.
Yeah.
Like a map.
Mm-hmm. And, well, again, I had a fella ring me there tonight. He's in court in the morning, and he just sent me his civil bill. Mm-hmm. And on it, I don't see any cause of action. Normally, they say, you know, 62.7 of the Registration and Title Act, or they might say, well, the court has jurisdiction because of a rateable value or whatever it is. But in this, they don't. They're just looking for possession.
Just cause.
They don't state a cause of action. So I say to him, I can't defend that. So your first motion tomorrow on your feet is to dismiss the proceedings. You're prejudiced because you don't state a cause of action. I can't defend that.
Of course. Yeah, there's nothing to defend. It's like it's like being invited to a boxing match without knowing what who you're fighting.
Yeah, that's right.
Or
you're not even handed the gloves. So.
Yeah.
So you're not willing to take on the fight. So I just said, look, if they come in and tell me what law they're relying on, I'll defend that.
Yeah.
But I'm not going in until they state what the cause of action is.
Yeah.
And looking for possession is not a cause of action, by the way, because I mean, I can look for possession.
I can look for that. I can look for that, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've often said to people, look, I can pick up a phone book. The way the system is struck, I can pick up a phone book, flick through a page and stab in blind. And if that guy doesn't know what's good for him, if I send him an invoice, if they don't know the system the way I do, but Jesus, he better pay.
well, let's say, you know, there's all these crowds like Pepper and Tanager and all these. Let's say I say I'm this new company called Salt, and I'm going to rub it into the wounds. I've taken over your mortgage, and direct payments now to me. It'll probably be 2 years before his own bank actually realizes it. And I'm going to get... I mean, I'd say if I wrote literally to 1,000 people in the phone book, as you say, that I've taken over your mortgage provider, what have you to do? Nothing. You know the way to send out all these questions.
The back-to-back letter,
And pay your mortgage now into this.
Yeah, here's the account number. You don't have to worry about a thing.
No, don't worry about a thing. And I bet you, maybe I've just come up with a business plan.
Yeah, anybody watching, do not do that.
Do that, please don't do that. Me and Vin will do it.
Yeah, we're ahead of you. It was our idea. Right? So, I mean, this is another thing that came up today, and we had a little chat about this earlier on.
Sure.
And I think it's important that we get to this, because multi-party litigation or multi-party litigious action in Ireland supposedly is not allowed.
Yeah, that's right.
And we were talking about it because there was a case where, well, do you want to expand on it a little, maybe, what we were talking about there?
I mean, the guy may phone in later on, so, you know, but I won't mention his name till he does. So anyway, look, there was a case involving Springboard Mortgage Funding Limited. I used to always think they were just Springboard Mortgages. When I checked on the CRO, there's several of Springboard-type companies. So what they did was, the guy was in court and got a possession order against them. Mm-hmm. And I checked his papers, and I come to the conclusion that the person who put in the affidavit is not an employee or officer of the bank.
Now,
in question. Now, they might say they're not a bank, so let's just call them Stepson for the minute.
Right.
Whoever.
But to the Joe Soap, right? To Joe Soap, he might look at that. And Joe Soap, if you're looking at your paperwork now at home, go check. Check the bank's affidavit that they sent to you. See if they have anybody in there who's not claiming specifically to be an employee of the bank, and yet they've managed to put an affidavit in.
Yes, in most cases they will say, I'm an employee by the bank, I work in the resolution department or the debt department or whatever, debt recoveries department, something like that. But they will say, I'm an employee of the bank. In this particular case, what they said was, I'm a litigation officer and I'm working the books of the plaintiff. Or I think you may have the exact wording, haven't you?
I have an exact, it just happened. No, it just, I mean, it's like a, it's like a coincidence or something. Maybe I'll read this verbatim, make sure this doesn't get
And because a lot of people would read it, and you could see where someone could easily think this person is an employee of the bank.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna, this is an affidavit of okay, and it has as follows: I, legal officer, legal officer, mind you, not employee, of unit blah 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 such and such a business park, age 18 and upwards, make oath and say as follows: I am a legal officer who deals with the mortgage accounts of the plaintiff herein. I make this affidavit on behalf of the plaintiff and with its authority and consent from blah, 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 blah. Nowhere does it say they're an employee.
Yeah, but even though it says that, you might think they just misstuck, you know, to put actually I'm an employee in, because the sentence nearly implies that, doesn't it?
It sounds like it does. It's very, I'm going to call that deceptive.
Yeah,
very unintentionally, deceptive. Perhaps.
Unless the person is an employee and just forgot to say it.
Well, I don't think so in that case, but anyway. Now,
I don't think so
thing. So, I would imagine this particular one that I'm holding here, this is what comes, folks, right? This is what the banks like to send you. They like to send you, they call these telephone books, right? They send you these telephone books in the post. And, you know, let's be honest, this will scare the living, you know what, out of most people.
Yeah.
And they can't read it without shaking.
No.
You need to go and find somebody like Ben or some of the other guys in the different groups and say, can somebody please go read that and check and see if all the requirements are there? So that's what I want to do. I want to get together and say, here's the requirements for them for their affidavit. They have to have this, this, this. They must be, in other words, here's the checklist. Are they an employee at the bank? Check. Well, okay, then you move on. Are they this? No.
Exactly.
Then everything stops and you go with that.
Is there a cause of action?
There's a cause of action. There's like essentially there has to be a certain amount of elements within.
Yeah. And they'll always refer to a mortgage.
Yeah.
Are they claiming they hold the mortgage?
Yeah. Now, as I was talking earlier
before you came on.
I remember,
because I will forget to say it later on. When you get a civil bill like that, before you even start putting in any defence or anything, you raise what's known as a notice of particulars.
Yeah.
And you answer loads of questions about what they're saying. And that normally sends them running before you even ever enter a court.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just
so notice of particulars. When they mention the mortgage, you say, are you claiming this is the current valid instrument that holds the charge on today's date?
Exactly. And do you have and hold all rights, duties, obligations, and so forth in relation to same, yada, yada.
And they've never been transferred, assigned, or similar.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get back, we are the legal holder, as in land registry. And I write back and go, that's grand. That's the answer to the question, which I didn't ask you. Are you the legal holder in the land registry? Now that we've done away with that, can you please answer the question that I assigned for you?
Exactly.
And then we had a particular case where the bank rang us then and said, look, can we come in and talk to you about some settlement? And we got a beautiful settlement.
Well, again, look, I keep saying to folks, I'm happy if people get any class of a remedy.
Yeah, look, if you can get on with your life and they're happy. I mean, yeah. I can never say to someone, oh, Vin, here's the thing you're going to be happy with. But if you say you're happy, I might say, well, I wouldn't be happy that I could go a little bit more. But if you're happy, get on with your life.
that's what it's all about. I mean, and the other aspect I'm finding interesting, and I mentioned it earlier, was that there have been families who've been... I'm not going to use the term evicted, but I mean, essentially that's what's happening, repossession slash possession. And yet, the children, Ben, there's no order to evict the children. In fact, they can't. Basically, what I'm saying here is anybody who actually has children, they're unevictable, if you will, strictly speaking.
Of course, you can't evict children. I mean, what you do is you could walk out with the sheriff if you wish, so there's no hassle in the house in front of the children. You could say your order is now executed and given you possession of the home. Child opens the hall door and says, Daddy, I'm welcoming you back in.
Come on back, said, Daddy. Don't piss off your kid that day,
way,
right?
Make sure your order is executed, right?
And make sure you haven't taken their PlayStation off them the night before or something like that for being.
Yeah.
Hey, you invite me back in, son.
Like that. Yeah, hey, son, remember what we rehearsed?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember anything.
Brings a new one into the Home Alone 4.
Yeah.
Home Alone. But look, I know we're laughing and joking about it, but at the same time, I think that's a legitimate position to be in. I mean, there are other articles in here that refer specifically to children, the rights of the child, etc. The protection of the child. I mean, how can anybody figure out they're protecting the child by evicting them?
Of course. Well, look, I mean, here's the facts in this country, right? I mean, only in Ireland would it happen. First of all, the banks created the mess. They breached all liquidity regulations, which carried 5 years in prison. That was the first issue. Second issue is the government, with no mandate, continued to bail out the banks. And we knew they had no mandate to do it because the first party to do it was Fianna Fáil. And they were absolutely decimated. And, you know, the new government went in with Radcar saying not 1 cent more to the banks.
Yep.
And they bailed them out to even a bigger amount than the last crowd. So they had no mandate to do that. Now, if the family is the most protected in our constitution, there's a breach of trust. And I think the minute someone should really try this, when you're in court against a bank, you attach and you counterclaim and attach the government and all the ministers for breach of trust.
Yes.
And see how they're like them apples.
Absolutely. I'm just off camera for a second. I'm just doing something here.
Yeah, and bring it in the name of your children, because then it's not even you. You're not even the mortgage holder. You're bringing in the name of the children for the breach of trust because they want to evict you, the children. I mean, Daddy and Mammy might have, you know, took out a mortgage, but you didn't.
Yep. And that happens all the time. People sue when, you know, the kid falls in the playground and they break their arm. The suit is brought by the parents, usually, but in the child's name.
That's right.
It's not that difficult a thing to do, sure it's not.
No, absolutely not. No.
I mean,
I'm all for or something it's called, but it's something similar to that.
Well, I'm all for, as I say, I'm all for anybody getting a remedy any way they can, because that article I was talking about earlier about the bulldozing of the 200,000 houses, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you were a Sparks back then, I think, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, how many houses do you think you've wired up, Ben, that were probably never even moved into?
Oh.
you know what I'm saying?
The only house I wired that I moved into.
No, but I mean, I'm starting to think, you know, how many houses did I put in? Doors and floors and skirting boards and all of that jazz, and they're still unlived in.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know, it is crazy. And it's crazy. But here's the facts as well, right? From the first quarter of 2015, from the figures from the central bank say that there's 120,000 mortgages on residential properties in arrears. Now, let's say the government, knowing what their duties are under the Constitution about the protection of the family, right? And we'll assume that most of these are family homes.
Yeah.
If you allow that, on average, there is 4 per home. Now, my maths isn't good, but it's a quarter of a million. No, it's half. It's a quarter of a million, yes. 125 by 4. Sorry, it's half a million.
Right.
Half a million people, right? In a country with a population around 4 million. I mean, they're going to be evicted.
That is actually laughable.
It's terrific, isn't it?
It's laughable.
I mean, who's done the maths on that one?
And when you actually, okay, now let's factor something else in there. Let's factor the amount of, inverted commas, state employees, right? Civil servants, right? What's that total up? Would you know the figure, roughly?
I'd have no idea, to be honest. But I know what the legal fees are making out of it, because if you take that even in a civil bill, I think it's €135 to launch one of those, plus an affidavit, another €20, plus solicitor fees, plus barrister fees, multiplied by 125,000 cases. That's an awful lot of money. And my question is, where's the bank getting this money to pay their legal teams, considering we had to bail them out? And they're using the bailout money to pay the legal teams to destroy the people they bailed out in the first place.
It's bonkers. I mean, there's no other word for it.
They were the laughing stock of the European Union.
It's crazy.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I don't think that I'm laughing. I mean, like, you may as well be putting a rope around your neck and swinging. It's one or the other.
Well, you see, here's the other thing, right? So let's say you add up all the people who can't perform on the mortgage, and then all their families. How many people is that altogether out of the population? I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say it's almost a quarter at this stage. It has to be.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Quarter of the population. Then you've the amount of the population who are, say, of retirement age. Is that a quarter again, or maybe slightly less than a quarter, is it?
I'd say slightly less than a quarter.
Okay, and then you have the population who are civil servants and their extended families. I'm going to call that another quarter again. And then you have the children. And you've then everybody else left, right? And that's who are effectively supporting the... In other words, we're living off the efforts of the other quarter of the population. But it's even worse because most people, as you know, in this day and age, don't work in primary industry. So it's, you know, what percentage of the industry in Ireland is primary industry? I'm going to say it's probably something like 15 or 20% now, if even. So we're living off... The entire country at the moment is getting by on 20%... Of one quarter, what's that, 5%?
Yeah.
Bizarre.
I know, it's crazy. Look, it's just, that's why I know Fine Gael have been talking about green shoots, and we've been hearing this for the last 2 years, but it doesn't filter throughout the country. I mean, Dublin may be booming because up around the IFSC, it's booming up there between Grant Thornton and Cerebus and Promotoria and Tanninger, and in case people don't recognize these names, these are all SPVs and vulture funds that are buying the mortgages. And of course, they're booming. They have a booming trade because, like I say, if you and I, Vin, rang around a load of people in a phone book, we'd have a booming trade too.
Absolutely.
So that's the issue, like, you know. And when you walk around the IFSC, you can see them. And Vin is back.
And of course, I was having a cigarette, you see. I'm not allowed. People get upset if I smoke on camera, so I go off camera to smoke.
All right. Well, I'm having an Indian, and I thought this is a good idea because, look, I just left that, I don't know if you can see that.
Well, for sure, see, I don't get looked after like that now, you know.
But I'm trying to, because normally I could have had that when we were on, but this camera thing is a bad thing now.
You can take a break if you want to take a little, if you want to do a little eating. but here's the, as I say, you're right, it's a fake, everything's okay, and the numbers are fine. On an accountant, you know, logbook, ledger. I was in business, folks. I know what you can do with a ledger and logbooks, right? You can make a silk purse from a sow's ear if you know what you're doing, right? And that's what they're doing. That's all they're doing. And the people who are saying everything's fine, those people are the people who only put on a suit to go to work. They're not the people who put on dungarees to go to work, I can assure you.
Yeah,
right? Let's be honest, you know? So, and the bulk of the country is the folks who put on dungarees and, you know, to actually go and physically work, actual work, you know. I mean, I know going and working in an office all day, I'm not knocking all that. I know it can be draining and tiring and all of that. But it's still not the same as having to physically bloody graft as well as everything else. You know, it's just not. It's just not.
Now, since I've been doing paperwork, the thought of going back on the tools is hard going. I'd
go back tomorrow. Oh, I miss it. Oh, God, I miss them. I miss the tools so much. I really do.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I have a shed load of tools out there just going rusty, and it breaks me heart. It really does. I was broken into.
We've been threatening to finish that room, Vin. It must be 5 years now, is it? We're threatening that. This is from a man who's claiming to be mad to come back on the tools.
That was a comment tonight around the dinner table. When are you getting that flipping thing done?
Yeah, this is you, Gilroy. Anytime you come on this show, don't start trouble.
You actually promised to do the wiring. I'll get you back into tools yet.
No,
but that's where it's at, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
They say everything's fine, the numbers look okay. But you see, the people who actually live and try to survive and eat and graft, we say, it's not okay. There's no bloody work for us. The guy is upstairs, the office is somehow is busy, but down here on the factory floor, there's nothing going on.
Yeah. I think it's time the people just basically, basically said to the bank, look, you know, prove all this stuff before we even go to court. In other words, you know, answer the notice of particulars before I go in.
Yeah.
Give someone who'll give an affidavit under penalty of perjury who's actually an employee. I know you gave me a link earlier on about a master's case in 2013.
Yeah.
That was overturned, you know, where the master said they don't have to prove Banker Books Evidence Act.
Yeah.
But I'll drop you in the affidavit I've done for that man. And you'll see it's Dermody versus, it's Ulster Bank versus Dermody as a case, 2014.
Right.
And that was an appeal again from the Master's Court. And in that case, she said, if you're not an employee of the bank or an officer of the bank, anything you're claiming in an affidavit is hearsay.
Yes. And I'm not supposed to accept hearsay.
No, you cannot take. The only time they will allow hearsay is on interlocutory motions.
That's all.
Other than that, because that's only because of the nature of the emergency of an interlocutory motion.
And another.
But other than that.
Well, in certain criminal matters, I mean, believe it or not, in certain criminal matters, like with terrorism, etc., they will accept.
Of course, yeah.
But other than that, no.
No, I'm just talking about the civil. And like, you cannot take possession of someone's house.
No.
On hearsay evidence. You just cannot do that. So the Dermody case is very good. And there's another case called Stapleton Bank of Scotland, where Stapleton was an employee of Certus. And again, he didn't have, he wasn't an employee of Bank of Scotland. And therefore, the claim was that his evidence was also hearsay.
The equivalent is, folks, is that, let's say you owe McDonald's, somebody in McDonald's a few quid, and they have an affidavit in there from somebody from Starbucks.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what the hell is this doing in here, right? You know?
Yeah. And that's basically it. But yet they're trying to take possession of the home from that. Mm. So you can't do that.
No.
So that's the first issue,
Also, the other issue, with particularly with Bank of Scotland, Ireland, or whatever it is they're calling themselves. What do they call themselves these days?
I think UKPC, PLC or something like that. Bank of
Again,
Scotland,
there's another question that, I think people should look at, is this idea that they're from a foreign jurisdiction.
Yes, that's right.
How can they have standing? They must.
Well,
you see, what happens when you go in and you make certain claims in there? They'll say, "Oh, you have no standing in here, right?"
Very quick to point that out.
And here are all these foreign corporations who supposedly, if they're a foreign corporation, they can't, unless they're bound to this, they can't possibly have standing in a court set up and established under this.
Of course, yeah.
Now I know people say, "Oh, Lisbon and all of that, and Maastricht and all of these treaties of." But still, that's what stands in our courtrooms, folks.
Yeah, well, not only that, in relation to the Bank of Scotland one, what they will be relying on is an order from the Scottish Court of Sessions that allowed a merger take place. Now, a merger is sometimes okay between two viable companies. Bank of Scotland Ireland in the last quarter of 2009 and all of 2010 and public record returns to the CRO were insolvent. You can't do a merger with an insolvent company. First of all, it's illegal.
Yeah.
Secondly, corporate enforcement should have shut them down. Thirdly, the financial regulator should have shut them down. But no, what they did was they go to the Scottish Court of Session and say, quickly, we're viable, let's do a transfer before somebody fucking finds out.
And on top of that, something people need to know about the Scottish, so-called Scottish Court of Session is, that's a continuous session. That session has never stopped. That's actually why Scotland is still under Crown rule, from that Court of Session. And they are sheriffs that sit in Scottish courts as judges. Did you know that one? They're not judges. They're actually sheriffs.
Yeah, I know they have very different laws now, even to England and Wales.
But this is why, you see, in Ireland, for example, in England, etc., you can be guilty or not guilty. But in Scotland, they have a third verdict, which is not proven.
Yeah.
We don't have that verdict here or in England. No. But the Scots have it. And there's, as I say, there's reasons, folks, worth looking into, particularly any Scots listening in there. Have a little poke around that box.
So I suppose, in relation to, this man's, he's in the High Court now tomorrow, and I wish him luck, trying to undo the possession order given against his house. I know he's quite worried by it, but I think I've given him enough law. I guess, Finn, if we can have a break, maybe for 5 minutes, play a bit of music. Yeah. I'll drop this in, have a quick read. I'm going to clean a bit of delve here and...
No problem.
Say 5 minutes.
Absolutely, no problem. And what I'll do for, I'm going to play a quick song break. I'm going to give you all a link. There's a link in the chat box. Everybody have a read of that. That was I just put this in, Ben, as a kind of a juxtaposition to what we're talking about with the likes of bankers and all. And in the Irish Mirror there's a story, a dad of five jailed overnight for non-payment of a TV licence. Back at this. Okay, Ray, say hello.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
There you go.
Good, Ray. How are you?
Okay. I'm good, yes, I talked to you.
That should get the two of you in there. Okay, that's...
I was wondering who was eating donuts.
It's not me anyway.
So welcome, Ray. Of course, Ray is normally broadcasting here, folks, on Monday night, 8 to 9 p.m. Ray Hall's Pictorial Weekly. So, Ray, what's on your mind?
Well, look, I have a big day tomorrow, as we know. I had a chat with Ben here over the last few hours. Since yesterday, I've been having a chat with Ben, and Ben has very kindly, he's very kindly advised me of a few things which I probably should have spotted a long time ago, and it's exactly what you are talking about. So, Ben, is there anything I should be worried about tomorrow?
A dishonourable judge, maybe, but the facts as I've given them to you are, it is what it is, there's already precedence in the High Court in the two cases I've given you. There are others since that, but I suppose the Dermody case and the Stapleton case have set the trend, and it proves that, it's hearsay evidence. But I think in your particular case where there's deception, it's clear deception trying to mislead the court like that. If I put in an affidavit for the bank and I said, I'm familiar with the bank's books and I do this under authority, and I'm employed, that might seem to some people I could be an employee of the bank. But if I state the facts without any obscurity and I say I'm an employee of Cadbury's, straight away the court would stop me right away. Yeah. So they didn't do that. They didn't do that in that case. They didn't adhere to where they were an employee. They've left that blank. And they didn't put down their true place of abode either. But the address they put down, I know what that company is. I know when it was set up. And I know it's not the plaintiff company. And nor is this even an affiliate of it.
Right. In fairness, we went Googling that. We tracked them down and we found out exactly who and where they are. Hmm. And you're correct.
Yeah. Well, look, I thank you guys, but I'm still nervous as hell tomorrow, but really, I'll let the paperwork do the talking.
But you should be nervous.
Yeah.
But shouldn't he be nervous, Ben? You're only human, Ray. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Everybody, my heart would be pounding in there. I'm sure Ben's will be as well under the exact same circumstances. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. The less you say is probably best. I would be saying, look, I'm nervous. It's all in my affidavit. There's nothing I could possibly add at this time. And that's always a great statement to make.
Listen, I thank you for the help anyway. And while I'm not going to talk about it too much, I really came on to talk about Ben. When this all started for us, we went through a traumatic time, as everybody does, right? And it's just not talked about, right? You've gone through the 3 or 4 years of abuse from the bank and the telephone calls and the threats and the this and the that and the other, right? And then you come and you face the day when you have to step into the court. And to be honest with you, you don't absolutely have one single clue what's going on. Me, the first day I stepped into the court, I thought I was getting into common law. I thought I had that choice, that I could choose common law. And as it turned out, I know you were in the court that day, Ben. I did do a job that day, but I wasn't allowed to close it off when I should have been allowed to close it off.
Yeah, there was an opportunity and you just missed it. But that's just experience, though, you know, and unfortunately, most people don't get experience in the courts.
I mean, isn't that the whole thing? I mean, you know, why aren't our children being taught in school about finance and legality? Because as soon as you're 18, it's 16, really, can't you join the army and do a few other things?
Yeah, of course.
Don't you think we should why don't we teach them a little bit about almost everything they're going to need? For, you know, reading and writing, let's face it, that's just the bare minimum. You need to know about contract law. You need to know about finance. Bare minimum. And even the court structure. You know.
But then they wouldn't be
easily as screwed.
Well,
I find you need to know that you need to know the structure. You need to know that the lower courts are administration courts, and you're not going to get. Well, they'll give you more time. You haven't a clue what's going on anyway. So
It's an unfair game, and the Constitution allows what's known as equality at arms, and everybody is deprived of equality at arms. But not only that, the bailed out money that the politicians robbed from the people is being used for the banks to pay legal teams.
To screw you.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. We're paying to screw ourselves. Someone actually raise that in the court and just say, look, I'm not prepared to continue with this until there's equality at arms.
Here's another little interesting one. The courts, Article 34.3. Have a listen to this one, folks, and this is why I often say this. The courts of first instance shall include a high court invested with full original jurisdiction in and power to determine all matters and questions. And here's the tricky bit. Whether of law or fact, civil or criminal.
Look,
if you haven't got one of these, folks, this Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
Get a box.
Good stocking filler. It's $2.95, I think, in Easton's.
Get a box of them. Hand them out like Smarties. Yeah.
Might be the best present you ever gave someone.
Well, I'll tell you something else. I know somebody who, let's say they had an issue with the dole office recently, and they went into their local dole office, and they used it effectively like a wallet for their paperwork. They had their paperwork in the middle of this, you see? And when they went in, I said, oh, yeah, the paperwork, yeah. And they were being screwed, right? And they took out the little book with the paperwork inside, and they put that down on the desk, and they took out the paperwork, and they started talking and doing the thing with the documents, and suddenly the one behind the counter looked, saw the little blue book, and suddenly there was no problems. Of course we look after that for you.
Yeah, it's like a little passport through problems.
Yeah, you know, he's got that. Oh, geez.
So anyway, Ray, you read that affidavit, and I take it you're fairly off favourite, are you?
You
understand the blanket they put over your eyes and the deception the last time, right?
Well, we knew that from the start, and it got diverted the last time, maybe a little bit, perhaps. And now it's back on track, perhaps, you know what I mean? And we'll see if we can have that looked at again, you know? So, rather than go too deep into it, and we'll see what happens, but, I'm very happy with what I'm going in there tomorrow with. Like, I did feel it was going to be, before I spoke to you, that I probably would have got an appeal or something, some sort of a thing tomorrow, but I would feel confident that you've taken it to the next level, Ben, you know what I mean?
Just so you know, Ray, I don't know if you know this, Ray, but you're on camera now as well, just in case you didn't know.
I did know that,
that's all right. Just in case you're, well, we've already there's already a comment gone up in the chat box from main admin saying, Jesus, Ray, you're good looking, so that's a good sign. Laurie thinks you're easy on the eyes.
That's nice. But I am nervous about tomorrow. Well, all I can say is I'll do the best I can, and I am getting more experience every week. And the last 2 days with Ben has been an education that I couldn't have got anywhere else. You know, so that's really what I have to say, and I do thank him extremely for his help and his advice and his guidance.
Well, I'm going to put it out there as well, because I know, you know, we get by on donations, and again, Ben, I'm assuming, you know, anybody who's prepared to offer you a little consideration for your time, effort, and energy, you're open to receiving that as well, gratefully, like we do. But I mean,
and if you know Indian tonight,
it is important. I mean, it is important, and I mean, I have no. You see, again, I have no problem asking on anyone else's behalf, and I regularly do. The problem I have is when I say, "Oh shit, we're down for our last few quid."
I know. It's hard.
I have no problem saying it for other people. And it is important, folks. And if anybody wants to use the donate button on People's Internet Radio, and all you have to do is type the word "for Ben Gilroy" as you're sending a donation. If you want to do that, no problem. Ben trusts me, I'm sure enough at this stage to pass them on to him. Or at least I'll pass on anything under 10 grand will definitely get passed on, right?
Yeah, I'm doing a talk in the UK next Saturday with Guy Taylor and a few other guys, you know.
Excellent stuff.
And so I advertised it up on the thing, you know, and somebody said, "Oh, a money-making racket." Now, I think they're charging €25 a ticket, right? And I said, look, I said, I have to pay for my flight and my flight return and the day in Saturday. Now, I'd say I'll get a few quid, but if anybody thinks it's going to cover the travel expenses, I want to know where the profit is, you know.
I'm going to say it straight. The people who generally make that comment, they usually respond back to those people, say, look, oh, you must be one of those people who the pixie dust fairies came along and supply electricity and computers to you and internet service providers for free. Hey, how about share with me then? We could do it.
But that's
free.
What I mean. He must be one of these guys who goes to work for nothing.
Yeah. You know, no.
Okay.
Look, until we have this situation resolved, and I mean the whole situation.
We
have to operate. And if people,
yeah, that's right.
And in fairness, I also think it's time that we do actually say thank you to everyone out there, genuinely, who has contributed and chipped in.
Look, only for people who do chip in from me, I wouldn't be able to do this. I mean, I'm down to Port Leash now in the morning, a particular case. Actually, this is probably good to talk about. First of all, I just wanted to finish off on Ray's point. Ray,
okay, yep.
I don't believe the court had jurisdiction to make that order. So your application tomorrow, no matter what you put down on the paper, because the matters that I raised only came to you on Saturday, is that you don't believe now the court had jurisdiction to make it. You believe that the circuit court's hands were tied by decisions of the High Court. But I wouldn't be blaming the court. The court was misled by the affidavit. And most people reading that affidavit would be misled by it too, in fairness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just a fact. So I wouldn't go blaming the circuit court. I would solely blame the deponent and the solicitors for the deponent.
On top of that, that wouldn't change
my stance that the order is void ab initio. And that you're not looking to set it aside. You're not looking to appeal it. You're just looking for a declaration in your judicial review that the judge will declare it to be so.
And you're not rubbing the fur in the wrong direction.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
We have a caller on the line. I'm just going to add them in just in case it's somebody who wanted to make a comment or something to Ben. Hello, caller. You're live on the line on the radio, if that's okay.
Hello?
Yep, you're live on the radio at the moment.
I'm just coming in on Ben's comment there. You were giving out of there and collected it. I know Ben very well, like, you know.
Yeah, go ahead. He can hear you there. Can you hear Ben, yeah?
Yeah, I can hear perfect, Jim. Yeah.
There you go.
Can you hear that?
What was that?
Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
Go ahead, he can hear you. Ben can hear
you. I can hear you.
Hello, Ben. Dermot, how are you doing?
Hi, Dermot, how are you?
I was just coming in with that comment there, you were giving out about you going to England and that. There was a guy the other day, he was giving out about Ben, and I said to him, I said, have you ever met Ben Gilroy? And he said, no, never met him. I said, well, how do you know he's such a bollocks? Oh, well, so-and-so told me, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, did so-and-so meet Ben? He says, no. So we traced it back to about six different people that never met you. That was all giving out hell, you know. So this is how you have like in Ireland, you know.
Well, I know there's a lot of people on my Facebook who would be from the legal profession and stuff like that. I can tell by the comments. So, you know, I accept that, you know, the worst thing about them not talking about you at all.
I know, yeah. But it's just mad the way, like, they say, oh, he's only a fucking bollocks. And then you say, did you meet him? No, I never met him, you know. And who told you that? Oh, so-and-so did. I said, can you give me so-and-so's number? So, and he gave me an inbox, so I fell onto the man that was at the telling him. I said, did you ever meet Ben? No, I never met him either. For so-and-so told me. And this is the way it goes along, right, you know.
And you lead it back and he's the sister of a sheriff somewhere.
Before you know it, it was all Gilroy's idea, right? The whole system.
Making great inroads, like, because I've learned so much from you, Ben, over the years, you know. Even last year, at the KBC, you were chasing me and hounding me. And all you said to me was, Damon, right to the last, which charge are you pursuing, you know? And I wrote after right. now, and it's, I have them all tied in knots. You don't know what to be fucking doing now, you know?
Yeah. Well, just in relation to I'm in Port Leash tomorrow. A couple came to me. They were the most nervous couple I've ever seen. The husband and the wife were almost crying. And they met in my house here. And when I went through their papers, I actually realized that their mortgage was sold. Yeah. I could identify their actual house trading on the stock exchange. I found the new mortgage in relation to the sale. I found the mortgage sale agreement, and I found the new deed of charge. So the last time in Port Leash Court, I approached the solicitor and I asked, first of all, I gave him all the information I had. So I told him the mortgage he was going into was an old extinguished mortgage, extinguished by this new mortgage in charge. I gave him the mortgage sale agreement, and I told him if he continued on, that I would be looking for his arrest for securities fraud. So he asked for a three-month adjournment. That's back on tomorrow in Port Leash Court. If he persists in the matter, I'm going to ask the registrar, will he indicate to the Gardaí to arrest him for securities fraud? And we'll see how it goes then, because I'm going to up the game on these bastards.
Oh, yeah, that's terrific. Like, even today, like, a guy rang me and says, Damon, there's a woman in York, because we're going to cover Mullingar Court tomorrow, and Ray Hall and all them will be over in Trim covering that, and then there'll be somebody else covering Tullamore. But we're there, I'm there with the advice that I got off of you, helping these people up before the court. So this woman rang me today, and she was absolutely terrified. She said, I'm in court tomorrow in Mullingar. She says, I don't know what to do, will I turn up? And I said, look, get up to the court, I said, because the first time you got the court, I said, it's going to be adjourned anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, the second time, then, I said, we'll have an affidavit prepared for you, that you're going to put a defence in, and we'll tell you what to say. And that's what we do, you know? But we do this from people like you, and Tom Darcy, and all the different Clare, Leonard and Al. We learn stuff from you people, you know? And we pass it on all around the country to different people as well, you know?
And can I just say something to you there, Dermot, because fair play to you. I mean, you sound like you're salt of the air type to me, and it's more people like you. I mean, you're basically starting where Ben started, it sounds, and you're doing what Ben started and what we were doing and what Ray Hall is doing. You know, this is all, that's why I'm saying it's important that people do what you're doing by saying to somebody, hang on, who told you that about this guy? Because I had that for years as well, and other people have had it. And see somebody doing what you're doing. I mean, I just want to thank you, because the level of decency you're showing by just doing that, by ringing the guy saying, hang on a second, have you ever met Ben Gilroy? Well, then don't be talking like that if you haven't met him. I appreciate you doing that, even for Ben, you know, that's just brilliant.
I appreciate it too,
No, but I just like to put them straight, because I know Ben a long time, and when I see somebody sort of sniding at him on Facebook, I go straight into their private box and say, have you met Ben? They say no. I say, well, why did you make that comment? Oh, so-and-so, so-and-so told me. And I say, who was so-and-so, so-and-so? When they send me a email, I go into his inbox then.
Yeah.
And I say, did you ever meet Ben before? No, but another fellow, so-and-so, so-and-so. And I traced it back to 8 people. So far, fucking mad, like, you know.
But fair play to you.
I tell you, some receivers, even who had a low opinion of me, would actually tell you now, after having met me, that I'm not the bloke they thought I was.
I wanted to ask you, Ben, with concerning KBC, I've asked them for the. When I was in the Masters Court last year, I used to take notes there every couple of days. You've probably seen me up there.
Yeah.
And the Master mentioned one time, I think it was. One of them, Mickey Mouse Banks, came in, and they were looking for the final payment up front, or up for the thing, and the Master said, where's the instrument to support it, you know?
Yeah.
So I wrote that down straight away, instrument straight away, and I said, I didn't know what an instrument was, it was a guitar or something, you know? So when I asked KBC, they sent out, I asked them how much was owed this time, you know, so they said so-and-so. So I said, well, can you show me the instrument, how you come to them figures, you know? So lately, they're sending me letters now with the interest and the payments only from 2008 up to today. So I can't understand why and you're not going back before that. Has it got to do with the Ulster Bank?
I don't know, but look, it comes back then also to the competent witness for jurisdiction of the court. There never is one.
No.
The first thing you got to look for is competent witness, and that's why myself and Vin spoke about this, and that's why the judge asks you, did you get the money? He wants you to be the competent witness.
Because if you say
you haven't got me in court yet, because I keep asking the questions and you've been put. I asked them which charge are they pursuing, and I never heard from them for 6 weeks after that.
Well, that's right. And then, not only that, it's okay to ask them, but when you get the court, you need someone to take the stand who knows exactly what charge. And that's what I'm doing tomorrow with this solicitor. If he wants to go in as the competent witness for the bank, he's going to bear the brunt of that.
Now, I was just going to say, did you want that out tonight, Ben? I mean... the guy knows what's going to do.
I warned him 3 months ago. I warned him 3 months ago. I told him out straight, if you're going into the court with that charge, I mean, you're committing securities fraud. I've given you all the evidence that charge has been extinguished, and there's a new charge in place in relation to that property. Now, not only that, you're supposed to come to the court as an officer of the court. Your first duty is to the court. And there's certain criteria to the officers of the court, and they're well laid down in law. And one of them is that you cannot withhold authorities from the court that even tell against your client. Okay? And you cannot withhold documents from the court that may tell against your client. So why are these banks coming in when I have all this information in this particular case where I can actually identify the house itself trading on the stock exchange, a new deed of charge, a mortgage sale agreement, and he's coming in with an old charge and the old mortgage and just leaving at that?
Wow.
Now, if that's not misleading the court, I don't know what is, but it'll be very interesting to see his attitude tomorrow. And anybody who's around the Port Leash area, pop in, you'll enjoy it.
I was going to say that. Is anybody going to be selling tickets outside?
Popcorn.
I wouldn't mind obviously that one myself. But here's the thing I'm going to ask you. What's the penalty, Ben? If in theory, right, this worked out, what's the penalty for this guy, potentially?
Well, he should be disbarred from the Law Society.
Right, but I mean,
you're not allowed to mislead the court. Now, he was on already on 3 months, and I gave him all the documents. I was trying to be as fair as I could with him.
Right.
Because, you know, I didn't want to go in and catch him on the hop. Even though ignorance of the law is no defence, I didn't want to do that to him, you know, because you've got to be a little bit honourable. He may be a good solicitor, and he may be a good guy. I've met a good few of them, no matter what everybody else thinks, you know.
I know some very good ones.
Yeah, so look, he was put on notice 3 months ago. I gave him all the documents. I'm not catching him by surprise. But if he goes into court tomorrow, it might be a bit of a surprise for him because he'll get both barrels.
But what I mean is, is there a statutory penalty as an X amount of time in behind bars for this potentially, or is it just, well, you're booted out of the Law Society or whatever?
Well, the Law Society would be for misleading the court. Securities fraud can, well, depends what jurisdiction you're in. I know in the United States you can do life for securities fraud.
I think that could be over 10 years here.
It is, yeah, because it comes under the false instruments on the Criminal Theft and Fraud Act. You're quite right, then.
Right.
And most acts, you'll see 5 years.
Yeah.
But actually, in the Criminal Theft and Fraud Act, 26, 27, 28, and 29, false instruments and producing them is 10 years in jail.
That's a long time to have a think about it, something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's why he got a good 3 months to have a good think about what he's going to do. And it's not worth it.
Good luck tomorrow. Let us know what happens, don't you, afterwards?
I will do. One of us is going to get arrested anyway, I think.
So bring a cake with a file in it, just in case, yeah?
I don't think that'll be Ben Gilray somewhere.
So it's in a very interesting case because very few people can actually go to the court and say, hold on a minute, here's my house trading on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
Here's the mortgage sale agreement. Here's the new deed of charge. You know, now the solicitor was given this 3 months ago. What's he going to do? So that's why I think it'll be really interesting. I'm not aware of another case like this, you know.
They're probably going to try and pull out of that one ASAP. Before you get a chance to say, who's going to be starting the ball rolling, them or you tomorrow?
They normally start.
Right. Okay.
Interesting. But I'm even excited by it because I just don't know what's going to happen myself. I have no preconceived idea of what's going to happen, you know. I really don't. I mean, your man made a lot of notes. I left him the copies of everything. So it'll be interesting. Like, I mean, he seemed an honourable enough guy to me, right? And he seemed shocked by it, in fairness to him. I think he'll go back to his client and say, what the fuck is going on here, you know? Right. I would imagine.
Mm.
And then they're going to say, don't worry about it, continue on. I don't think he's going to do that. I mean, if I was a solicitor, no matter how hungry I was for a few quid, I don't think I'm going in with that potato. And especially, you know, with me, I don't mean that in a big-headed way, but just, you know, he'll probably know I'm mad enough to try run over and try arrest him in the court.
Yeah, well, this is the other thing. I mean, I'm just going to fix the background here. I don't know why I clicked something and the background disappeared, so we're just in blackness. But I'll fix it, folks, don't worry. Had you kind of considered that, just tapping him on the shoulder and do the old citizen's arrest and then straight to the guard and say, I'm now passed him directly into your custody, he's under arrest,
I've several things played in my mind, and I don't know which one, you know, sometimes you have three or four options and you just whatever one's comfortable or presents itself on the day is best.
I might even
instruct the registrar, would you please instruct the guardie to arrest him?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you're competent enough to do this, you see.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've all the facts. I mean, I've identified the house. There's no question in my mind it's that house trading. There's an awful lot of information as regarding the house that makes me know it's this man's house. I then have the mortgage sale agreement. I have the new deed of charge. So I don't really know what else I'm missing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, anyway, at the very least, he's not performing on his duty to the court first as an officer of the court.
Right.
Because if he didn't come in with that information, how come I have it?
Exactly.
I mean, it's all the plaintiff's information. I have to go digging for it. It's at our hand.
You see, and again, the more I hear about this, I'm sitting there thinking, if I was the solicitor or barrister or whatever going in there tomorrow, I'd be thinking, like, I'd have made a phone call already about this, you know?
Yeah. I thought we'd have got notification, listen, can we talk?
Or, yeah, something like, you know.
So at this 11th hour, obviously it's going ahead tomorrow, so anybody who's in around the Port Leash area, it'll be interesting. It'll be in the Registrar's Court. Funny enough, the strange thing about this, Vin, but I didn't know the last day, right, was when the solicitor stood up, he said to the registrar, he said, Judge, we want to put this back by 3 months. An issue has arisen that I just need to check. He said, Mr. Gilroy, he said, holds power of attorney for the other clients, and, you know, we have consented to put it back for 3 months.
Right.
And the registrar looks up and he goes, Mr. Gilroy, what's the first name? And somebody, he said, Ben. He goes, Ben Gilroy? And do you know who it is, Vin?
Go on.
I didn't think till afterwards, because somebody says to me afterwards, I see he knew you. And I said, yeah, who's that registrar? He said, Featherston Haw. You know the sheriff in the Leash video who's not the sheriff? You couldn't make that shit up, could you?
Let me remind me, how many views did that video get?
About a million.
Okay, roll up, get your tickets here.
Yeah, that's the video that made famous, Ben.
It
yeah,
is,
yeah, well,
yeah.
Do you know, that video, the amount of people who come out fighting in the courts now and standing up to the banks that have come to me and said, that video made me start.
That was
and
the
start
one.
Challenging everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I say that with hand on my heart, and you've heard me say it before. Mm. It was that video and you that inspired me to come this way. But I'll fight at some stage anyway, so might as well learn off you, you know?
Yeah, well, it was sort of totally accidental, the video thing, you know, just was one of those things that happened. We've often had a camera, these things, and nothing really happens, you know. But what was astounding is that, you know, that guy, Pat Dunn, I think his name was, he was saying he was the sheriff. I knew he wasn't. I knew because I remember the name Featherston Haw. It just is a peculiar
it's
name.
It's one of those names, isn't it? It's a Featherston Haw, right?
Yeah, it's
awfully,
not a name
awfully.
You forget.
Interestingly, so
that's who the sheriff is, and the registrar tomorrow.
Briser just put in the chat box, he knows that registrar as well from his situation.
Oh, I'm sure there's even Lee Wellsett knows him well as well. But the issue then is, you see, what was peculiar about that video was I knew he wasn't the sheriff, right?
Yeah.
But do you remember the sergeant that was standing there?
Oh.
Now, surely the sergeant knows who the sheriff of a county is. And
not
he was
that.
Okay with standing there, having a sheriff saying, well, having a guy who's not the sheriff saying, I'm the sheriff, and I'm going to take possession of a home. And there's a sergeant there standing with a duty saying, you know, I'm here to take this sworn oath to uphold the Constitution, protect the family, make sure the family dwelling is inviolable. But I still shut my mouth here. This guy is saying he's the sheriff, but he's not, but I know he wants to take the property.
Well, because he... And I know people find this hard to believe, but he was there as a hired hand initially, and the Garda Síochána part only kicks in if he sees a breach of the peace. You
That's
see? Because people need to know they get hired. I mean, if you want the Garda, for example, at the GAA matches, they have to pay them to show up.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's why a lot of people thought, you know, they labelled me with this Freeman stuff because I asked him, was he under his oath? And a lot of the Freeman do that. But the reason I was doing it was I knew that there was a posse comitatus writ sent to the Garda. So he's either there as one of the posse of the sheriff or he's there for breach of peace. I just wanted to know. But he answered the question because he mumbled, I'm just here with the sheriff and sitting behind him, meaning I'm here just under posse comitatus now.
He turned physically and walked away, remember?
He did. Yeah.
And that's another, folks, if you haven't checked out Posse Comitatus, please do so. Remember the old Wild West movies, we're going to get us a posse. The full term is Posse Comitatus. Supposedly, I mean, I've heard Alex Jones say it was done away with in America. It's not really, folks. They can't do away with it. But it's still here, too. But essentially, that's what's happening. But the sheriff's office has to offer a remunerative package to Gardaí to show up in that manner. Just you can, you know, you can hire Gardaí as outriders for a VIP to the airport.
That's right. Yeah. Or even for funerals or stuff like that.
People don't notice though.
Yeah.
And but you see, so, and then if they're there and if something happens, they go, right, active duty, and they go into their interesting.
Well, yeah, it is, and it's funny that, you know, this first case that I have like this, where there may arrest take place, is in now the Register of Ederson Hall's court tomorrow, which makes it just sort of, you know, it's just like one of those football matches where there's a long niggle and
full circle.
Full circle, you know.
Picture Port Leash tomorrow, standing room only.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting as well, what people might know, is Featherston Hall, the Register, has a brother who's a solicitor, also Featherston Hall, obviously, who got struck off for wrongdoing, let's put it. You know, it's purely coincidental.
Bit. Here's another thing I'd like to talk about. For these court cases tomorrow, I think people need to start writing to the court clerk in advance to say to them, because I know there's no legislation preventing me from filming and recording my case, I'm letting you know in advance I'm going to be doing it. They need to start doing that.
I told the president of the High Court before a case started, I told him out straight, I'm recording the proceedings, is there any objection?
There you go. But people need to do that.
No.
Rather than find out, you know.
That tomorrow.
No, I wouldn't piss him off tomorrow for you, Ray. You're just looking for... You're fighting backwards. You're not on the front foot, Ray. You're on the back foot.
If somebody else is doing that, then let them know.
I'm on the front foot.
You have enough on your hands.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I might learn something when I listen back to it, you know?
Remember, I told you, your statement tomorrow is it's all of my paperwork. There's nothing I could possibly add at this time.
Yeah, say nothing and keep on saying it.
I keep on saying it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Somebody's asked me what happened to the background. I accidentally deleted it and I added it back in again. So there you go, folks. So these things happen on the fly. How are we doing time-wise? I'm not doing too bad. 20 to 11. So look, Ray, maybe just come to you for a sec. I mean, how's your family doing, Ray? I mean, how's your missus and your kids? I mean, what? Because this is the thing. It's all about family, right?
We're coping, yeah? Like basically, we're not in control, or so it seems you're not in control. But actually, now I feel I am more so ever than, because at least I'm doing something about it. And my wife, I know, appreciates that. And the kids are okay. They know something's up, but we don't talk to them about it. So that's it.
And you see, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think that's the right way of doing it. You know, it's not right to tell these things to your kids, I don't think. You know, it depends on their age group, but, you know, it's not right on a family, you know? I mean, what do you say to that, Ben? I mean, at this time of the year, family haven't...
Well, I mean,
eight weeks away from Christmas? And, you know, we are, supposedly the country's in recovery, and we're talking on here about families potentially being evicted?
In fairness, you know, I suppose us challenging the courts over the last number of years, considering, you know, there's over 125,000 mortgages in difficulty, there has been very few repossessions, thank God, and touch wood.
And I think that's directly down to the likes of what we've all been doing, and I mean all the different groups.
Oh, absolutely. I think if there was no opposition to this, they would have done it. I mean, they'd work on profit and profit alone, issues don't come into it.
It'd be hack, slash, and burn, yeah.
And that's why we need to keep doing what we're doing. Yeah. You know, we absolutely need to keep doing what we're doing.
And I do it
in a respectful way. Tomorrow I will be more than respectful in the court. I won't be shouting or I won't be abusing. No. I'll be very calm explaining the matter.
Dignity. Hold yourself with dignity. Hold your head up high. And integrity.
Absolutely.
Because we are the people. And the people deserve it and we deserve it. I mean, I keep saying to people, look, don't worry about showing whoever else respect and integrity.
Yeah.
Hold yourself with dignity and respect.
That's right.
Respect
and
yourself.
It shines out of you then as well. Where if you're just shouting and that, you know, what you're shouting about gets unheard anyway, because it's very hard to hear someone what they're actually shouting.
Yeah.
And then it looks like you're a rabble-rouser if you got dragged out of court, and people say, oh, he's an idiot anyway, or, you know, he's rabble-rousing. Where if I explain this tomorrow to the Register in a very calm, comforting sort of way, and say that, you know, I'm sure he wouldn't want any fraud brought before his court, I'm sure he'd be disappointed if officers of the court were misleading him by withholding documents that tell against their client. there's a good case law on that. If anybody's looking for it, I can't think of it offhand, but I'll get it and I can drop it in if somebody's looking for it. And it's the duties of barristers and solicitors. And you know, there's a code of conduct from the Law Society on barristers as well, and it says something very similar in it. But, you know, what one of the cases actually says is that a barrister's duty is to vehemently defend his clients to the best of his ability. Yep. And he's not to be in fear of raising any issue or argument, no matter how fearless or distasteful that may be. But, it says, he has an overriding duty to the court, and he must not mislead the court.
Correct.
And he must not withhold documents or authorities to tell against his client. Now, that can't be much clearer.
The Master of the High Court said it in that interview with Marion Finucane as well. Fiat justitia ruat caelum. In other words, let justice be done, though the roof may shake.
Yeah, or the heavens should fall or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what no fear, you know, to any man.
Yeah,
I mean, when the judge...
Without fear of favour and ill will or affection, isn't it? That's how they're supposed
to... It's without fear or favour, affection or ill will towards any man. Not any bank.
That's right.
Any man, right?
Yeah.
That's important.
So,
Article 34.5, folks. Just if you want to look that up, Article 34.5. That's the oath of office that the judges take, okay? And it's to a man. It's to man. It's not... And I think that is important, Ben, because we need to start saying to these people, look... I'm the man here, you know.
Yeah, but there's very few people actually put the court, you know, on that sort of pressure. And once you do it, you know, I mean, they've been trying to get me into court for my house here since 2011.
Right, but you see, they tried to say to people, are you one of these free men on the land things? Say, hold on a second. You're the one who swore to the man, right?
Yeah.
Not to the bank here. Not the corporations.
Yeah.
To man.
And I'm the man in front of you.
And
in case you haven't recognised.
And if you don't see me as him, then who do you see as him?
Yeah.
If it ain't me, who is it?
They don't see us, the man.
Somebody haul his ass in here. I want to have a word, you know?
That's like a guard who stopped me one time and he kept pointing at me license saying, that's you. I said, that's not me. He said, it is you. I said, look how brainwashed you are. I says, I'm over here. I said, that's in your hand and you think that's me.
Yeah.
I said, arrest that and let me go. Then.
There you go, throw it in jail. As Mr. T, the wonderful Mr. T, used to say to us in situations like that, just say to him, well, hey, you think that's me? Ask it a question and see if it answers.
Yeah, well, I said set it on fire and see what happens to me. I'll take that risk.
Yeah.
I'm so sure that's not me.
It is funny.
You can have fun.
There's another little one about barristers. I don't know if you know this one. I thought this was interesting when I found this out. See if a barrister doesn't get his fee, they're not allowed to sue.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they can have no direct
no contact they
connection with you.
Yeah. I just thought not.
Did you know at the back of a barrister's jacket up here at the back of the cloak, there's a little pocket in it.
Yeah,
and that's where you used to push what was called the AMS into it, the same as the church. You know, the AMS into it. And a lot of people don't know the difference between senior counsel and junior counsel. You know, the senior counsel has the black flap across the back, where junior counsel just has the ordinary collar.
Yeah.
Just little things.
Is it true that a barrister must carry a checkbook with him to the court?
I've heard that. I don't know how true that is, right, to be honest.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Some things you hear, now, they don't seem credent to me, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I put it this way, I have never seen that in the rules, their so-called court rules or anything like that.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Most barristers only don't have a penny even to buy a coffee when I go without them. I always end up paying.
Well, I think, though, there is supposed to be, it's not necessarily a checkbook, but I think there is definitely supposed to be this, inverted commas, ability to make restitution on the day. It's kind of like the stock exchange, close of business.
Yeah.
Remember in
trading
places?
Well, I think they're on their bond or something like that. They have a bond in the court that's supposed to be good.
Yeah. So essentially, but again, a lot of that stuff is getting into the commercial redemption stuff, and I despise all that stuff.
Of course, I know.
It turns into nonsense eventually.
Yeah. It was a pity with that video because, you know, when I asked the guard on his own, that's the only reason I asked. And then, of course, you know, the barrister who's an expert in debt collection wrote the article. Now, while he doesn't say I'm a free man or doesn't link me to it, he was very clever in case I'd sue him for libel. What he actually says is, this is what they do. They did something similar to what Gilroy did there, but this is what they do. And then they do all this other horseshit as well, you know, and he tried to put it on me. And then what was unfortunate then about that is, a couple of months later then, I was helping a couple whose name were Freeman. And it was Freeman versus Bank of Scotland, and of course that only added.
Oh, I remember.
But it shows like how silly they are.
It was interesting,
you know?
Because, and again, in that was the what did the Law Society Gazette.
Gazette.
And there was an article recently I sent you. Did you have a look at that one?
Remember, what I said was it that was one?
Page 5 about 3 weeks ago. I think I sent it to you. No.
In the Law Gazette as well.
Yeah, I sent you a little from the PDF. No, do you not remember? No, a few weeks ago.
That was on court rules, though, was it?
On
admissibility of affidavits.
Yeah. Did you have a look at that?
Yeah.
Some interesting. Well,
I wasn't mentioning that, was I?
No. But no, some interesting little things in there. Yeah. But just on the Gazette, though, for other things, they danced around you very carefully, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
But yet, you know, I mean, I've often wondered, why do they never call us, Ben? Why do they never actually call in and have a straight chat? I mean,
rang him and I said, look, you know, I didn't mind you writing an article about me. I don't want anybody writing about me. Please tell the truth.
Yeah.
Have you got to make shit up?
Well, where was your right to reply?
Superstar once now and again, will you?
Did you get a right to reply? They were sort of implying there'd be a right to reply.
Yeah, there was a sort of an implied right to reply. I've just been so busy, but it might be a good time to do it because, as I say, I come out on prime time and said I wasn't. And now, I mean, I've been in so many court cases. No one has ever said, I see Gilroy's still doing that, you know, asking the judge on the road and asking is he this and asking is that. And he doesn't say acts and statutes and all that. I mean, I used to convince and acts against them, so I don't know where they're getting this horseshit, why it still has energy today.
Yeah.
But well, look, again, as I said, and what Dermot is saying as well, everybody calls me, well, not everybody, but a lot of people, you know, say I'm an asshole and stuff like that, and that may be true. I mean, we all can be at times, but however, you know, I remember at the time of the elections, people were saying we were funded by the Rothschilds and this sort of stuff, you know. And I didn't deny it. I just wanted to know when the check was arriving. But, like, you know, where did these people come up with that? Like, whoever told you that, do you ever question them now and say, or you remember there was a thing, I was a Freemason and I was a this and that. And I love it all. But, you know, you must be running out of people to come with stories who you take with credibility now.
Look, you put your name up there, you put your face out there, and you get out there and you do anything. You have to stand there and you have to just take it, folks.
I just take it with a bit of a laugh. You know, as I say, you know, the Rothschilds were funding me for the election. Terrific. I just want to know when the fucking check arrives.
Yeah, well, sure.
And do you remember Johnny Squires one time when he was on to you, but they were slagging me off on the radio station about charging $700 for knocking at my door.
Yeah.
And Johnny says, I think that was last year's
prices. Last year's prices. I laughed my ass off of that. I laughed.
Yeah,
what I loved about that was the way it was just such a little throwaway comment for Johnny. It was just such a last year's prices.
I don't know, even if Johnny tries to be funny, you know.
Johnny's a dear, isn't he? And there's another thing. 4 years, and Johnny got the better of them, thanks to you, Ben, as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were a long time trying to take Johnny's house, and eventually they gave up, they threw the towel in. And all we were doing was asking questions. No funny stuff in the court, just asking questions.
That's the power. I keep telling everybody, just keep, it's everything you do in there is a question.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
All you have to do is ask questions that you know there's only one answer for.
That's right. When they come in and say, a mortgage dated such and such. Sorry, can I just ask a question in relation to that? Is that the current valid instrument?
Yeah.
3 months adjournment.
Every time I've seen Ben lately in the court, I think solicitors do shake when he walks up with the homeowner.
Straight away,
first words, they were seeking an adjournment.
That's what a friend of mine said one time, you know, Jerry Beads, you know Jerry as well, right? And we were in a court case in the High Court at the time, and I was helping this guy. And the judge, when he was putting it off for, say, a couple of days or a couple of weeks, I can't remember, but he said, Mr. Gilroy, how is, you know, such and such a date for you? And I looked at the guy and I said, that's fine. He didn't even ask the guy I was helping, right? So, of course, Jerry Beads is sitting in the back of the court, right? And as we go out, we're walking up the corridor, and I'm talking to Jerry. And Jerry goes, Jesus, things have changed for you in the court. He says, I remember years ago, he said, they'd be calling the guards for you. Now it's, Mr. Gilroy, does that date suit you? And chew sugar in your tea, Mr. Gilroy.
Would you like me to chew your porridge for you?
Jerry's nose was out of joint.
Yeah, they'd be blowing on your porridge, Nick.
He said, next time he's bowing at you down the corridors.
Sorry, Ray, say again?
Jerry's putting a few noses out of a joint this week himself, or just in the week just gone by, he was himself with the Shannon email.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, Jerry has the ability to upset everyone he meets.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to throw a little kudos out there as well. The new book, Waiting for the Sheriff, Tom Darcy, it's really getting out there, folks.
And, sure is.
Getting great attention. And I think it's brilliant for many reasons. It's getting attention drawn onto this. There's people in Ireland, folks, who don't know the sheriff exists. They don't know anything about him. Sure. I mean, it's a joke to them. They think, what sheriff was he? Come on a horse and all this with a six-shooter or what? Sure. They don't understand. They don't understand who this guy is and his office. And you were at, was it in Drogheda or Dundalk, Ben? You were at outside Dooley's place. And you were talking to a guard there, and I think he said something like, Article 50 is how they got into the Constitution. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's right. Now, you know, he was brought in there specially.
Oh, yeah.
You know that, don't you? Because I said it to him, and he started laughing. I mean, he didn't know how I knew that.
Yeah.
I said, you were drafted in specially to challenge me when I came up with the Constitution, because he was smart enough, in fairness to him, you know.
And he had it ready.
He had it ready.
And I'd encourage people, just read Article 50, folks, and you'll see. I'll give you a quick. Subject to this Constitution, and to the extent to which they are not inconsistent therewith, the laws enforced, legislation, in Seirstadt, Ireland, the so-called Free State, wasn't free and it wasn't a state, immediately prior to the date of the coming into operation of this Constitution, shall continue to be of full force and effect until the same or any of them shall have been repealed or amended by enactment of the Oireachtas. Now, the funny thing is, of course, is it was repealed, amended, etc., etc. And yet, still, the sheriff's office is out there acting as if nothing's changed.
Well, if you believe it, he believes it. Remember that time Michael Reid had me on NMFM?
Oh, yeah. Well,
and
he
said to me about the President of Ireland. And I was saying that, you know, unless he took an oath of office, you know, you can't be president. That's just the law. I mean, the law is the Constitution, and that's what it says. I don't make it up.
Nope.
If people want to take it out, they can take it out. But, you know, right now, that is what it is.
I mean, I don't know how an agnostic can stand there and say, in the presence of Almighty God.
No, neither do I. I mean, you can't take an oath under the five lamps in Dublin. It has to be under God, right? So it doesn't matter whether people believe in God or not, by the way. This isn't a religious speech. It's just that's what the law says.
You're
and
right.
That's the only way you can take office.
It's a legal requirement.
Yeah. But Michael Reid wanted to get me into it to try and argue against it. And he says to me, and do you believe the President of Ireland is Michael Higgins? And I said, sure, he must be. He says he was.
Yes, he is. Now, and again, remember the provisional government thing.
But you caught him out on that, lovely, didn't you?
We have three recorded phone calls at the very least where they've actually said down the phone, yep, provisional government, absolutely. We have a newspaper printed in 1937 that was printed in America, the New York Times, I think it was.
Yeah, but Michael Reid just wants to argue black is white. If I say something's black, he wants to have a white, and he tried to ridicule you. So because I gave him no fuel to it, I just said, well, when I was in school, and this is genuine, when I was in school, we were always thought it was a provisional government. And I said, if you're telling me it's not, hey, you must know best. And I just let him at it. I didn't go into it.
He didn't, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
Will we take a music break, folks?
Yeah, let's do that.
Give me a few minutes, folks. I'll come back. I just want to go make a...
What about? Have you got specials, Ghost Town or something like that?
Probably do.
I could just see you with your Crombie.
Because it'd be like that in the courtyard. This place, it's coming like a ghost town. All the barristers have been closed down.
You just sing it. We won't. You know.
I have to make it up as I go along.
I tell you what, we do a Father Ted. We play it 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
Here we go. And we're back. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Sorry, I hit the camera there. I was gasbagging around there. Anyway, as I said, welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. We still have Ben Gilroy and, of course, we have Ray Hall on the line. Still no detractors have sent me even messages to call in. But if you want to call in, folks, there is a number. 00353144-3309. Of course, you can always call in over Skype. Actually, there's somebody on the chat there. Vin James wants to call in. I think, Vin, I have you on Skype. I can bring you in. That's no problem. And I appreciate some of the ideas and notions that you're putting out there, Vin, in the sense that, yes, it's all legislation and all of this stuff, but people still have to deal with it, Ben, don't they? I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Look, what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, they're thinking of two different types of defenses, you know, about the legislation and all. When you sign your mortgage contract, you agree that the courts of Ireland, being the legislative courts, have jurisdiction. Yep. So that's the first issue, because it's in the definitions. So, you know, don't get confused with the arguments. It's different to a seatbelt and a traffic violation and stuff like that. You know, this is a contract where you did sign it. So, you know, you got to play that ball game now.
On top of that, look, I mean, and I know other ways of dealing with that too, which I
have talked about. Oh, me too, but I don't want to confuse the issue.
No, but what I'm going to say is, look, it's... all of this stuff, effectively, it comes from your level of understanding. I mean, even that was the conversation, yeah, I was having with Ray here earlier today. You know, you'd understand things differently to the way maybe someone else would, someone new. Mr. T, for example, he's way up here, I'm down here, someone else might be here. Someone, you know,
yeah,
we're all at different levels. But yeah, most people, it's where they're at. It's where their heads at. It's where their minds are.
What I say to people is, look, there actually is enough legislation within legislation to protect you, and once you understand what competent witness is, let's even start there, then it's not difficult to, you know, even if you never win, you'll never lose, let's put it like that.
Yeah, we should have
raise a competent issue. I put in, by the way, just been code of conduct in the message here to you. I think it may be still downloading, but if you want to put it into the chat box, I don't know how to do that. I see it's going in 3 minutes remaining.
Okay, Grant. So we're getting a little bit of an echo off Vin there. Vin, are you there on the call, yeah?
Yeah, hello there, Vin.
Hi, how are you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a good while since we've heard from you. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Hello, Ben. I know we
Hi, Vin, how are you?
Assaults. Yeah, not bad, mate. I hope you're doing well.
Been a while?
Yeah, I joined my show. Cool. A year or two ago, well, probably a little bit longer than that now, maybe two or three years ago now, but yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And you still
think
the same
got cut off, didn't we? It never went through properly or something. There was a bit of a problem with the connection and we never quite
watched
it all, but never mind.
So is there anything in particular, Vin, you wanted to chug into the mix in relation to what we're talking about tonight, or is it a different thing, or...?
Oh, well, actually, it was another issue that I wanted to raise, but because I wasn't sure if Ben had sort of finished the interview with you for the night. So, but I mean, sort of, I didn't get to hear everything you've been talking about regarding this issue with the Irish courts and about mortgages and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, you did mention the comments I made regarding, you know, how we should go about looking at these things. And yeah, when people start talking about bringing up these issues about, you know, shires and sheriffs and things like that, you have to realise that these are just political terms at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And
they call the whole thing political science, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's hardly a science. It's about as subjective as it can
That's
get.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the favourite one I hear is, I think they've done this with you as well, Ben, in the court. They say, I'm not having here to have a philosophical conversation. I was like,
the whole
bloody thing is a philosophy.
You know. The judge in the High Court said to me, this isn't a moral court.
Well, yeah, they're absolutely right there. But it's, I was in court myself a few weeks ago helping someone out as a McKenzie friend, and the issues that we were raising, we was obviously just challenging them on the facts, on the fact that, you know, where's the evidence proof, the law is applicable, and, you know, evidence of jurisdiction, the usual stuff, and I immediately got attacked for that, and I was called a free man on the land or whatever, you know, and...
And it's, you know, it's annoying, isn't it, Vin? Because it's too easy. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, oh, please, come off. Is that the best you got, you know?
Yeah. And it's a thing of now, the courts are taking this attitude. I don't know how bad it is in Ireland, but I know in certain parts of the country, in England, and... You know, they hear this stuff all the time from people going in trying to use these types of methodologies, and it seems to be now that obviously it seems to be fading a lot now. You know, not as many people are using it because it's run its course, it's not worked, and you're finding people aren't using it as much. But what you're getting is when you walk into court and you dare even just challenge them, immediately that's a red flag to them, and they think you're one of these, you know, freeman on the land types or whatever, and these are the ideologies you're preaching, and for doing nothing more,
it's become the equivalent
challenging
of
them,
the
which is
conspiracy
what you're supposedly entitled to do in the first place.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of that. Oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, Yeah, I was just going to say that it's funny, in all the times I've been ridiculed as being a free man, it has only been on RTE, in legal publications, and on newspapers. Yeah. No one ever, ever in a court, or any judge ever, has ever said that to me, or given out to me for the way I behaved in court, because I don't do any of that shit in court.
And that reminds me of something. I'm nearly sure, who was it I was talking to? Oh, it'll come to you in a second, but it was one of these legal folks, and I said to him in passing, I said, but sure, you keep calling or inferring Ben Gilroy is a free man on the land. I said, number one, he's not a member of the Free Man website. He never was.
No.
I said, number two, not one of yous has ever actually went onto that Free Man site and asked for the guy who did start it for an interview or a comment or anything.
Yeah. I mean, he told me out straight, he didn't want me a member.
and I mean, I used to be a member of the site, and they booted me out, so nobody ever called me that either. Well, it was kicked off, and so...
I think that's probably one of the old forums I used to be on, donkeys years ago, probably about 10 years ago. My name still may be on it, I don't know. But, I mean, I remember joining it years back when I first got involved in all this myself. That was the path I took, same as most people. I got involved in the Free Man on the land stuff.
But probably a lot of it was eye-opening for people that you could actually challenge this system. And, you know, I look at, if they want me to argue from a Free Man perspective, I mean, I can do that if they wish, because I know what their arguments are, and I don't think they even know how to ridicule it. So, I mean, if they want me to argue that, but it's very hard when I say I'm not, but I'll still argue. If you want me to do it, I'll do it, because, you know, they had a barrister's, a law society convention in Dublin there recently, and myself and Charlie McGuinness were not allowed in.
Right.
And then they were talking about the free man issue and stuff like that. And
hang
I was saying, well,
don't,
look, you
don't,
know.
Don't skip over that, Ben. Just give them the little story there, what happened. Just tell it, because that's a good one. Go on.
Okay, so they were having this Irish Law Society about the latest going on in the courts and, you know, what the latest acts have changed in the statutes and stuff like that. And then they were talking about, unique defences from free men on the land and sovereign types. And they refer to them as sovereign citizens, whatever that is.
I'll tell you where that is.
It's an oxymoron, isn't it?
No, I'll tell you where that is. That's page,
So anyway, so they stopped us coming in. But luckily enough, I had a friend who was going in, and they took a dictaphone in for me. And I got a very good recording of it. Lo and behold, the barrister's on the stage slagging me off then, saying, I hope none of Gilroy's infiltrators are in here tonight, but we have it all on record. It's hilarious. But I was suggesting that if they wanted, just so they could have sort of a proper, you know, debate, I would actually go in and argue from the free man stance. And my understanding is all they want to know is how any of this sort of horseshit sticks to them.
Which is exactly what the free man on the land perspective is. How does your horseshit stick to me?
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they kind of take a position already that, it doesn't apply to you, but to your person. Your person is this legal entity, and then after a few years of that, it suddenly became you're a corporation and this sort of thing. And, so they already take a position on it, you know, as if it's fact on many of these issues. And that's the problem with the free man on the land stuff. The moment you do that and you take any type of position where you're claiming what you think you know is true is fact, then you've got to prove it.
If I was going to argue from the free man perspective, and again, I say I'm not, but I think I understand their issue, is simply I would just say to the barrister, look, you just tell me what I can go back and say to the free man, because the only question they want to know is, how does any of your acts and statutes apply to them? Now, that's as I understand it. Now, when you can come up with a good answer to that, let me know what it is. And don't come with it says it because it says it applies, so therefore it applies, because other than that, I'm going to bring out the Ben Gilroy Act, and you're all going to owe me €20,000 by Friday. So, and by the way, there is a clause in it that says it applies to you, so therefore it applies.
Yeah. But,
and they're not very good at arguing against that.
Yeah, but I mean, this is sort of some of the points I was trying to make in the comments, and that, you know, it's not an issue of raising arguments with them. It's not going to help you. if you start arguing with them. But it's one of the most natural things we do as people, you know.
Yeah.
It's the fact that we always want to argue and we always want to be right.
That's
the problem
right.
with
but,
that.
Well, they need controversy. You know, they need controversy because you can't have a court case unless there's a controversy. I mean, you couldn't possibly have it. Like, let's say I send you an invoice and you pay me. There's no controversy, so you can't go to court. You can only go to court when there's a controversy. So you're better off making sure there's no controversy even before you go to court. Even with a bank, you know, just ask questions. Hey, you know, do this, well, exactly, do that, and I'll pay you.
Yeah, I mean, that is what you raised before about, you know, there has to be a cause of action and that. And a cause of action is basically the foundation of any grievance you have of anybody. And,
yeah,
I think you did mention about the elements that have to be in there, and that's absolutely right. But you have to realise that I'm pretty sure it's the same with the Irish courts. It's considered an adversarial system.
Yeah, well, the court service will warn you. In the court's own literature, it warns you that it's an adversarial system.
Yeah. So that means there has to be an injured party, as they call it.
There has to be controversy. You know, there definitely has to be controversy. I mean, let's say, for instance, I could say that Ray punched me in the face tonight and I could bring him to court. It doesn't alter the fact that he didn't do it or he might have done it. The fact is I'm bringing him to court because I'm saying he done it. Now there's a controversy. So it doesn't matter that I'm injured. You see, he didn't punch me in the face, so I'm not injured, but I could still have controversy. But they need controversy. If there's no controversy, you know, and that's why I always say to the banks, like, you know, you're talking about a mortgage, just, you know, answer this, this, and this, and then we're tickety-boo, ready to go into controversy land. But right now there's no controversy. I'm accepting everything you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing with mortgages
when you document, is it documented, verified?
That's it, document and verify the obligation. I'll take care of it.
That's it. Well, there you go. Let there be no controversy. Because once you document and verify, I'm going to take care of it.
And I'm going to show you another simple little thing, folks, which so many people don't realise how important it is. I mean, even if you have to stick your hand in your pocket and pull out a 5 or 20 quid or whatever, just hold it up and say, I'm offering.
contradiction.
I've yet to find it. It is in, I recall it was in the Lisbon Treaty crap somewhere.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to refuse. Because you're offering, see that? That to them, oops, hit the microphone. That to them is relief. You're offering relief. Now, once you begin to offer relief, it completely evaporates, if you will, the injury.
That's right.
Or perceived injury. Now, it might not be, you know, the Band-Aid, as they say, the Band-Aid might not be big enough, right? But at least you're trying.
Yeah. The best of my ability. Substantial performance.
It's amazing how all these crimes we get accused of can suddenly go all be magically, you know, forgotten about and taken away if we just give over this thing called money to them. I know it's
ink on paper. That's what they say. You know,
it's one of these things with when you're going to challenge a mortgage. I would say don't try and get into arguments with them. Just challenge them on the facts of the issue regarding. The fact, is there any evidence proving that there was a meeting of the minds regarding the contract?
Well, I'm not sure you need that with the corporations because there's two corporate non-minds, if you like, so it's on a par, I think they'll say, you know.
When you sign a contract for a mortgage, say, you're of the belief, or at least they're making you believe that they're lending you something that they've got that you haven't.
Yeah.
Now, people get into arguments about, well, prove you lent me money, but the problem is that, as far as they're concerned, and the courts will protect them on this, is that they don't have to show evidence of that. They don't have to prove they had the money.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good tact in court, though,
when you're asking for facts proving it was a meeting of the minds, that is a different it's one of the fundamental elements of a contract.
Okay, well,
where are the facts to prove that?
Okay, well, here's the thing, you see, Vin, and we were talking about that, maybe you missed that earlier. We were talking about that earlier, because that comes in under for subject matter jurisdiction, you have to have the four elements, right? Plaintiff, defendant, subject matter, and a competent witness. And we know that the bank can't possibly be the competent witness, and that's why the judges over here are blatantly asking people in the court, did you get the money? And people are saying, yeah. And they become the competent witness.
That's right. And don't close the elements for them.
Don't close it for them. Just say, well, are they saying, have they a competent witness that says I got the money?
Yeah, but how does that prove there was still a meeting of the minds? Receive something?
No, what I'm saying is, chuck it back over to them.
It's not the fact that you receive something, it's the context and a manner in which you thought you was receiving it.
Not well, I think the law has changed on contract law that it becomes the intent to create legal relations, I think, is it? And that
yeah,
would
it
be...
it creates a relationship, but you're not fully informed as to what that relationship really entailed. That's why you go after that element.
That's not going to be good in court, though. I mean, you're right about what you're saying there, but if you want to fight it in court, there's so many other better ways to do it than that. I wouldn't be going, the first thing I would look for is a competent witness in the court. There isn't one. So why not close it down good and quick?
Well, okay, well, in fairness, I mean, I don't know how often you've been in there, Vin, and I know you've been in, and I know you do great things, and you've helped lots of people, and I've heard from people who've told me that you've helped them, and fair play to you for that, you know? And I suppose there could be differences in the jurisdiction. As I said, we have a different setup over here, slightly different, you know what I mean? And we do have a printed up, very easily, readily available little blue book constitution to get our hands on. And, you know, even people just walking in with that in their hand unseats them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't have that.
This is what Mark challenges in the States, where he says, where is the evidence proof that the Constitution and the Acts that you claim, you know, that you think apply to me, where is the facts prove they do? And it's the same with the Irish Constitution. We don't so much use it in England, of course, because there's the Magna Carta and all these other so-called acts that...
Well, there's a brilliant book, and I've told this to so many people in England, there's a brilliant book, Chalmers and Asquith, Outlines of Constitutional Law. That's the British Constitution. And, oh my God, if you haven't read that book, you should read it. It's an eye-opener. It really is. It's a stunning read.
But I think if you read Lysander Spooner and you apply those same...
Absolutely, but...
arguments to the British Constitution or just about any other constitution around the world...
Here's the reason,
though. It destroys any claim that constitution gives them any authority over us at all.
Right, it doesn't. But what I'm saying to you is in the Chalmers and Asquith one, it talks about the royal prerogative and all of these things and sovereignty and all of those different aspects are in there, and it's all to do with the so-called British Constitution that most people don't seem to know where the hell it is. Tons of the elements of it are in this, plus it was printed in around just after the Irish, well, in around the time of the formation of the so-called, as I say, Irish Free State, which was neither free nor a state. And you see, because they were doing a load of hooky things with Ireland, and they had to still pull it back under the British Crown banner, this is what I'm saying, some of the things in there are two-way. It's a two-way street, which is why I'm saying that this little blue book, in theory, I can see no reason why it shouldn't be usable by you guys in a courtroom over there.
Yeah. And just another thing in relation to that, you know, if the Constitution gives me a protection, then the Constitution applies to me. If it doesn't, then I'm still going to claim the right and protection elsewhere, Lincoln was a famous lawyer, and he used to say, look, if you don't argue a point, don't bring it up.
Okay, well,
if it comes up, then you're going to argue it.
Okay, but here's the one. Don't forget, we started off tonight saying that asylum seekers in Ireland, asylum seekers and immigrants can't be evicted from their dwelling. The guards can't break in. Why? Under the Constitution. Now, those people are from every corner of the globe.
Yes.
And they, nobody, I don't think anybody would argue, oh, they came in here and they signed contracts and accepted the Constitution and
that's
all
right.
That jazz. They came here as refugees, most of them, because if I go back there, I'm going to be killed.
Yeah.
And yet, what happens is, you see, the servants of the Constitution, those who actually do sign up to it, the Gardaí and the courts and all of those people, they have no option but to treat everybody, no matter what corner of the planet they come from, they have to treat them in accordance with this. They
have to.
It's their requirement, not ours. That's key.
Yeah, but you still find yourself with your courts. They're still corrupt. They still ignore that. They don't respect the fact that you supposedly have legal rights and things like that. So I don't think it makes any difference. I mean, Lysander Spooner said it. You know, the Constitution either gave us the government we've got today or it's powerless to stop it. In either case, it's unfit to exist. So if you're still experiencing corruption and you know, injustice within your courts, well, then that constitution has done nothing to give you any protection to stop that from happening.
At the same time,
and
I mean,
if that's the case, well, then there's no point in it actually existing in the first place.
Well, as I said, there have been situations where it has done, and I've seen them, you know. But it has to be brought up the right way, and, you know, it's a subtle thing. Would you agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say all the courts are corrupt. I've come across some very honourable judges and in the court. Seriously, I've seen a lot of people, you know, talking horseshit in the court and bringing in laws that isn't right and they're misquoting sections and stuff like that. And look, the place to do it. But for people starting off, I mean, I would just be looking at competent witness. I think that's such an easy process. If you understand that that's one of the legs of jurisdiction,
yeah.
And jurisdiction, the court doesn't even become a court until all aspects of jurisdiction are established. So if you're missing one leg of the table falls.
Yeah.
And that's really simple. I mean, I used to do that years ago when I knew very little. I used to say to the master of the High Court, is there a competent witness from the bank? And he said, would you like me to bring her in? And I'd say, terrific, let's bring her in. Now, they'll do some other tricks behind that. Like what they did was they went in an ex parte motion before the High Court to get her affidavit to be used as evidence without her coming in to be cross-examined. So when I went back before the Master of the High Court, I genuinely thought she was going to be there to be cross-examined and had all my questions ready. And the Master said to me, look, he said, she's not coming in. You know, the Master throws his eyes up to heaven and he says, the irony of this is, Ben, you might be called in to be cross-examined on your affidavit. And I said, but I know what I'm talking about. But as I was leaving...
And not only that, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but at the time, I'm nearly sure this is right, wasn't it a case that he said, well, I notice they've done that, but that they hadn't quashed my order to call her.
That's right. Just as I was leaving the court, because I made a funny comment about, well, I don't mind being cross-examined because I know what I'm talking about when it comes to the competent witness. But as I'm leaving the court, he says, oh, by the way, Ben, he said, I noticed he said they got an order to use her affidavit as evidence, but they didn't get an order squashing my order to get her to come in. He said, might be a contempt issue. And with that, I just laughed at him and said, I missed that one, didn't I? So, you know, was contempt of court if she wasn't going to come in.
Honohan's not the worst. He's not the worst.
No, he's not, and he's actually a very honourable guy. But what he actually said one day in court is, because somebody else then asked for a witness to come in from the bank, and he threw the case out, and the barrister was going mad, and he went mad back at the barrister. He said, hold on a second here, he said, these are the courts of Ireland, he said, and a bank should be delighted to get the opportunity to come in here and tell the truth and win their case. He said, it's a great opportunity for people, you know, in our legal system, that you can come here and take the stand and give evidence. In other countries, you can't do that. And he said, yet when the banker invites you to do it, they don't do it. He said, and you want to start whinging about it. No, no, dismiss the case.
And I remember the other case where there was somebody and the bank had a claim on their property and they said, blah, 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 folio 123, part of folio 123,467. And he said to them, which part?
And they
said,
that was classic, wasn't it?
Don't know. Void for uncertainty, get the hell out.
That's right, dismiss for uncertainty. Yeah. And you have to be certain. And if you haven't got a competent witness, how are you going to be certain about that?
Can't be certain about anything, can you?
And that's an easy, like, you don't even have to understand statutes or acts, because that can get complicated. And conveyancing law and the conveyancing acts are complicated. That's why I say don't start there. That's not a good place to start. Start with competent witness. That's a terrific place to start.
In fairness to Vin, and I mean, you know, I keep an eye on Mark Stevens and what he's doing as well. And I like Mark. I mean, he's a genuinely decent guy.
Ah, I like Mark Stevens too.
And I encourage everybody to start researching and reading. But what I'm finding, Vin, is, and maybe you found a bit of this yourself, I mean, even I was probably guilty of it a few years back. It was very easy, you know, when you start in a lot of this stuff, it's easy to get locked into one sort of position, if you know what I mean. It's very difficult to get out.
But
there.
there's a huge difference in with them in, say, like what Mark is doing in, say, parking tickets and traffic violations and council tax and stuff like that. That's a huge difference where there's no contract with them people and he fights it on that issue. It's a totally different issue where you've been brought in where there is a contract, or at least
an
alleged
contract,
and you've signed it, and there's no doubt about it, you did sign something, you know, whether you claim with the contract or not. But, so there's a huge difference in an issue. Like if the council were coming in and said, no, you signed the contract here with us, then you'd be fighting the issues we're fighting. It's different courses for different horses, and just don't get the two of them confused. That's all I say, or you will end up in trouble. So what Mark Stevens does with the rates and the, you know, seatbelts and all that, that's all terrific. You know, I don't find any fault with that at all.
No, I
love where he goes into the council and he actually challenges the council. He says, I have a checkbook right here, he says.
Yep.
Once you show how it applies to me, I'm going to pay it.
That's it. I'm offering you restitution right now. You show me how I'm on the hook and I'll take care of it. And of course,
and it's similar to what he's doing. He's actually saying somebody there who's going to be a competent witness from the council you know, come forth and show how it applies, and then I'm signing the check. I'm not refusing. There's no refusal to pay here.
Yeah.
And that's why it has similarities, but just slight differences as well.
Essentially, it's document and verify the obligation, and I stop talking, and I start signing the checks for you.
Everybody should learn that off by heart. Document and verify. No matter what anybody comes, even a TV license or whatever, anything, document and verify the obligation.
With all these issues, it doesn't matter if it's civil or criminal, and it doesn't matter what you're in there for. It doesn't matter whether it's a contract issue or not. The principles are still the same regarding the cause of action. A cause of action is just a synonymous term with a criminal charge. They both mean exactly the same thing.
I'd agree with that.
And the elements are exactly the same. There still has to be an injured party. There has to be the violation of a legal right, breach of a legal duty, and so on and so forth.
However,
into play. So even though, you know, a lot of what we do regarding, you know, fighting parking tickets and things like that, it's still the same thing. It's still the same principles that we use, and it wouldn't matter if we were fighting a parking ticket or we were taking on a bank over a so-called breach of contract. We would attack it exactly the same way. We would go after exactly the same set of facts.
Yeah, the only difference is you've got to remember that there's different standards of proof on both, though. One is just on the balance of probabilities,
but the facts remain the same irrespective of that.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean, like, let's say I'm the bank then, and I produce a contract where you signed it, you know, I have payments coming from your bank to me every month, so you're acknowledging there's a debt to be paid, and then all of a sudden you can't pay. Like, on balance of probabilities, that's almost enough proof until you raise some issue there.
Well, the issue is, or the issue they have to raise is, if they're going to bring a complaint against you, is that they've become injured because of that. If you've not paid it, they've suffered a legal injury, it needs redressing, and that's what they have to prove. And that's what you go after them for. So, I understand the fact that, you know, they'll just simply argue, well, you signed a contract, you promised to pay it, you never paid it, there you go, it's as simple as that, but
there's elements with a breach of contract, you see, because there's an unintentional breach of contract is not dealt the same way as an intentional breach of contract. I mean, that's the
it's the causation, it's what it causes. This is how all law is meant to operate. It's meant to be your act caused injury, harm, loss, B.
Yeah.
So that's what you've got to address. So that's the entire foundation of what they're coming at you with.
Oh, yeah. Everything
they say after that may be true, but if they can't establish that foundation first and prove factually that's true first, then everything after that, whatever they claim after that and argue, is going to be wrong, irrespective.
It's the intention which is what makes the difference between, say, manslaughter and murder. I mean, the guy was still killed, but it was, well, did you kill him accidentally, or did you actually plot and plan and mean to kill the guy? You know,
that's what I always say too, Vin. Yeah. The intent, the word intent and consent are two huge words in law. I mean, I've often said to a person, if I was holding a knife and I turned to look at something and I just happened to snick you on the jugular and you bled to death, right? Or I turned and I purposely did it, they're both the same action. They both end with the same result. You're dead on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that's going to mean me facing life imprisonment or getting off scot-free is intent. Just what was the intent?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm very much in favor sometimes, especially with the civil courts, with banks, of doing mock courts. Because a lot of what you say is absolutely correct, Vin. But I will act as the prosecutor for the bank. And remember, I've only to satisfy the judge on the balance of probabilities of, is there an injury to me? Is there a loss to me? Is there a contract? And on the balance of probabilities on your arguments, I will win if we even have an impartial judge.
Yeah, but like I say, if a bank is meant to have lent you money, so let's say a bank has claimed it's got £1 million in a bank and it lends you £500,000 of that.
Well, let's say you're in court now, right, and I'm going to be the prosecutor for the bank. I'm going to be the solicitor for the bank now, and you make your argument to me, and I'll tell you what I'm going to respond.
Okay, so do you have any facts to prove that you're an injured party?
Yeah, I have statements here where the debt was reducing, and then you've missed payments for the last 3 years, and the debt is going up with interest.
How does that make you an injured party?
Because I haven't been getting the monies that we lent you.
Okay, do you have facts proving that you've suffered an injury?
Yes, I just showed you the statements.
No, without an opinion, what facts are there to prove you suffered an injury?
Oh, it's a printed statement from our accounts department, where there's an injury. We're actually in a deficit. We had to borrow money from the government because we weren't getting paid back this money.
Okay. So you can prove that you had money in the bank.
Sure, I've got the statements here. Yeah, the statements where we gave you a bank draft, and that's how you have a house. You're not telling me you got the house for ice cream, are you? You got it because of our bank draft.
Well, irrespective of that, I mean, you're saying that you had £1 million or £500,000 that you've lent me.
Sure.
You're now £500,000 short on your bank account.
Plus interest.
You've not received it.
Absolutely. Plus interest.
You can prove that.
Absolutely. I have the statements here. Okay. Statements are here. I'll print.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Back to reality. A bank won't have to prove that.
They will have to come in with the statements and stuff like that. But the issue is, you see, on the balance of probabilities now, if anybody's listening and people are going to be honest judges, have I proved there's an injury because I've come in with the statements and I'm showing you got the money and you obviously bought the house with the money I gave you? I think most people are going to say, yeah, on the balance of probability, I've won my case.
Yeah, but it all just comes down to an opinion. When you're saying that you're giving someone a statement and this statement proves it, what you're saying is that somebody else's opinion, somebody's written opinion, claims that there's an injury. So it still just keeps coming back to an opinion all the time.
Well, let's say I'm the judge now. Let's say I'm the judge, because quite often the judge will interject and he'll ask you a question. And he'll say to you, Mr. James, did you receive monies from the bank?
I'm not here to answer to the merits of their case.
I just want to get, because if you're not going to put in a defence, I mean, on the balance of probabilities, the bank have shown statements here showing you got money. I'm just asking, did you get money and did you buy a house?
I'm not going to answer to the merits of their case, and I don't need to put a defence up until they've proven their case.
Well, they have. On the balance of probabilities, they've come in with a mortgage you've signed. They've come in with a statement of the bank. They've actually come in with payments that you've made. It's coming from your account in another bank, say from Ulster Bank across to us, for the last 7 years. You've been making payments, but in the last 2 years, you've missed payments. So on the balance of probabilities, the bank have won, unless you put in a defence. I'm trying to help you here, Mr. James, the judge might say to you. I'm trying to help you here.
I can see where you get it at, but again,
we're always trying to help you. How can I help you in the cell if you don't?
I'm trying to help you. You could say, Mr. Barrister, is there competent witness in from the bank to say that them statements have been printed from my records?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know, but what all they're showing is numbers on a piece of paper.
That's why I like doing mock court, because I'm so used to it, you know. And remember, balance of probabilities is not beyond reasonable doubt. It's huge gap between both.
Now, in fairness, I mean, look, I don't know if you know this, Vin, but myself and Ben, we do this a lot with each other when we meet. When Ben had called up to me, we'd be thrashing all of this stuff out in the kitchen, you know what I mean? And we have a lot of fun. We'd be laughing our asses off for all of this stuff, you know.
Because sometimes we come up with a corker and go, I'm going to use that.
It's the element of fun. The element of fun.
I know judges play these games, but it's a matter of just pinning them down on those facts and saying, "Stop giving me opinions. Stop giving me numbers on a sheet. Where is the actual evidence to back it up?"
You're not wrong, Vin. You're not wrong.
They can't and they don't have it. But they'll keep going around in that circle all the time. It's circular.
Vin, let's say I was the judge and I'd say to you, right? Okay, well, the bank here have statements, right? And they're certified statements from the account. What evidence are you looking for? Do you want to open the vault and show them a blank space where the money once was? Is that what you're requiring?
And there it was, gone.
Yeah, there it was, gone. Yeah, no one Irish saying, Vin.
Essentially, that is kind of what you're actually trying to ask for, even if it is just down on paper, where they can show that they have an account that is short X amount of money and that they had the money there to begin with.
Yeah.
And because we know they didn't have that money to begin with, they just created it out of thin air. They just created it as credit and not money.
Right. Preaching to the converted.
I was looking for a case a few years ago of a fella out in the States, and it was over, I think it was a £20,000 loan. And we actually got the bank admitting they never lent him a penny. It got kicked out three times based on that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Trying to come back after him and resue him again for the money. But they eventually did get the bank to admit this, that they never actually lent him anything.
I think the judge got shot after that case, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I think that was a case that was years previous.
That's what was in my head.
A judge had apparently admitted that, oh yes, the banks never actually lend us anything, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that was... that was meant to be a judge who got killed while he was out fishing or something like that. I remember hearing that many years back. Yeah. But no, this was actually a separate case. But you know, if you stick to your guns and you actually get them to, you know, you hold their feet to the fire and you just keep pressing on those facts and keep saying to them, stop giving me just people's opinions and numbers on a sheet. Let's see some real evidence, something I can get my teeth into.
Okay, so, but why would you call real evidence?
That's exactly what I was going to say. What if he said it, to you, what would you call evidence? What would you tell him?
They just don't have it, do they?
So. No, but let's say the judge says to you, what would satisfy you, Mr. James? What evidence are you looking for? What would satisfy you? I mean, it's a bank, and they're saying they gave you
the
money.
Account the money was transferred from that you had previously.
Okay, so let's say they show you that. Here's an account we set up.
Credit existed prior to you lending it to me. You're claiming that you had something I didn't, and now you're short of it. So show me the credit that existed in a bank account that you transferred over to my bank or transferred over to, you know, the mortgage company and paid for my, you know, paid for my house and that.
And the bank could
prove that credit actually existed prior to that. And the fact is, obviously, as we know, they can't because they create this credit out of thin air.
Yeah, but
no, they award it to themselves and then say, there you go, now we've just lent you something.
But while I get you totally right, Vin, and you're singing to the converted, I understand about money creation.
When you're asking that's for not going to win in court. What do you think they can produce? They can't actually produce anything. They're stuck in a rut now because they can't move in it.
No, all the judge is going to say is, I'm satisfied. I mean, you must have got money because there's a bank draft that you got and you bought your house. Are you saying you never got money from the bank? And that you didn't buy your house, that your mother gave you the money or something. Is that what you're claiming?
Yeah, but you unless you actually do something like that and actually go and pay for a house cash, if you like, or transfer your own funds, your own credit, you never see the money, do you? You never see
I know that, but I'm just saying if you want to win in court, I mean, we can have a good discussion about money creation, and I love all that too, but I'm interested in winning in court, and... If you want to win in court, my advice is stay away from them arguments. I mean, they're great arguments that we can talk about.
You're asking for facts. That's the whole point.
It's not going to win on a court. It's not going to win because the bank doesn't have to come with that sort of proof. The bank has to prove that on the balance of probabilities they gave you money. You were obviously paying back. Then I would say to you, well, if that's the case, then why were you paying back money for 5 years?
You just don't get dragged, don't get pulled into that. You just simply.
But if you're not going to answer the judge,
merits of your case, because they will use that against you.
I know, but the judge. But forget about the other side. I'm just thinking of a judge. Let's say a judge is just asking you, are you saying you never got money from the bank? On the balance of probability, he's not going to believe that, because why would you sign a mortgage in favour of a bank in the first place? And unless. You know, if I held you to the same strict proof, I'd say, well, show me in your account where you had the money to buy the house if you didn't get money from the bank, and then why would you have signed a mortgage to the bank in the first place, giving them a first charge on your house?
If that's the case, you obviously wouldn't have a mortgage. But if you bought a house out your own funds, that you'd say, that would be easy to prove, wouldn't it? That would be absolutely easy.
So you've just proved the case of the bank.
Yeah, I mean, say this, turn the tables on this and say this is between two neighbours or two friends.
Yeah.
The neighbour has £100,000 in his bank and he goes, I'll lend it to you. You pay it back to me over 10 years or so. Give me 25% extra.
Okay.
And, you know, that's your 100 grand. Now, you could prove in that circumstance, in that relationship, that bloke had £100,000 sitting in his bank account, he transferred it to his friend's bank account, and that friend then bought a house from it. You could prove that step by step in a crime.
I absolutely agree with you.
And prove it, and you could have some evidence that you could get your meetings. You know,
agree with you on that, Finn, but here's the point that you're missing. You're going on the beyond reasonable doubt. Let's say you say there's two neighbours again, and you gave them a loan of 10 grand, and you signed a contract to say, yes, I got 10 grand, and I'm going to pay you back in 10 years. The court isn't going to ask where I got the money. Let's say I had it under a bed, and I can't prove I had it. But on the balance of probabilities, we can prove that you were paying me back as per an agreement. There's an agreement signed and in place. And all of a sudden you want to say, well, unless you prove you had the money in the first place, you're going to say it doesn't prove the case. That doesn't make sense to me. I get where you're going, but I think you're confusing the two issues between on the balance of probabilities and reasonable doubt. I think you're getting the two of them mixed up. You're asking the bank to go to the beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it still comes back to this whole thing of they have to prove they've suffered a loss in a sense of, that they've suffered a legal injury, as they call it. You had injury and damage.
Can I just chuck something in there, Vin? You see, now, I, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. No more than
me
Ben.
Me neither.
You know, we're not actually disagreeing with you.
I understand how difficult they make it, but these are elements that should be easily provable when you actually think about it. And why do you think they can't come up with the evidence for it? Because it just doesn't exist. They don't have it.
Right, and they don't need it.
That's what you've got to press them on.
No, but you don't press them because you can't change the law. The law in a civil matter is that it's on the balance of probabilities. You're not going to change that.
And they're the plaintiffs. Let's not forget, they're the plaintiffs.
Irrespective of a yardstick that they put up against it, facts are facts, irrespective of that. That is the highest denominator, if you like, irrespective of whatever the burden is.
Okay, so the facts are... You're in a house, you signed a mortgage, you were making payments, and now you can't pay. They're the facts.
No.
Well, according to the bank, they're going to be the facts. That's what the bank is going to put in front of the judge, right? I mean, that's they're the plaintiff in this matter. They're presenting this.
Yeah, they're making a complaint claiming I suffered a legal injury. Now prove it.
Right,
it doesn't matter whether I received the house or I'm living in a tent. Prove you suffered a legal injury. How are you going to prove it? You're talking about... See, the thing is, with legal injury, that term legal gets slapped on so many...
Hey, Finn, I have it. I
understand what
Finn,
it means, but...
Finn, let's say I'm the barrister for the bank. They're just after phoning me. They actually have the CCTV footage of you signing and being handed the bank draft, leaving the place with the bank draft.
Well, just
is that good enough for you?
Yeah. I mean, a contract only exists in your head. You understand that, don't
you? Sure.
It might be words on a bit of paper, but it just came from somebody's head.
Of course. I mean, a written contract is actually a contract that they use the term has been reduced to writing.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a reduction.
It only exists, but the truth of the matter is it came from somebody's head, didn't it?
And it's all only evidentiary anyway. We know all that. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, I think the conversation we're actually having now would probably be better off, off air rather than on air in one sense, even though there's good learning in it. But as I say, we're not actually disagreeing with you.
Because it's at least they get to understand, the difference between balance of probabilities and reasonable doubt
and stuff
like that.
Methodology.
I could be an excellent prosecutor for the bank against some people. And then you can see why a load of people actually lose in court. And that's why, really am for winning in court, irrespective of the argument. So if you can win in court by A, why are you arguing X? Or if you can win with B and C, why are you arguing D, E, and F? It's what's your objective in court? It's to win and get the hell out of there. They'll use anything that they can beat you with. So, it's a game of tennis. If you can lob a guy, why are you always trying to, drop it short over the net and you've missed 50 points still now,
Yeah, but the way we approach it, with Mark's approach that we use, the model that we stick with, Socratic questioning and things like that, it's understanding when they're just coming back at you with logical fallacies.
I know, but is it successful in court?
It's picking them out, and it's not getting dragged into them yourself.
Is it successful in court or against mortgages?
Well, Mark's had some success in America with helping people out with mortgage cases and loan cases. Mm-hmm. We haven't had much luck over here because we just haven't had enough people get into court yet and try using this stuff in court. Over in England or Australia.
That's coming though, Vin. I mean, isn't the situation? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean the situation over there is becoming literally as dire as it is here in Ireland now.
Yeah.
What are the numbers over there?
What we need to get people doing is challenging these issues on the facts of the case rather than raising legal arguments. That isn't going to help you win.
How many properties or homes are we talking under threat over in England at the moment, roughly, if you have any idea?
I don't know, mate. It's probably in the tens of millions right now. During the last recession in the early 90s, I think it was about 10 million people got turfed out of their houses.
What?
It was something like that.
Now, are these like purchased homes or rental homes or?
A lot of it was mortgaged, I believe, and this is when the, what was it, the endowment mortgage
debacle
sort of kicked off, and a lot of people ended up losing their homes over that. But but this is when interest rates were in ridiculous bleeding, you know, rates where they would get into, I think, about 15 or 20% and things like that for some people, you know. Wow. It was... That's what was crippling people, and that's why they was losing their homes. But what they did during this recession was they kept interest rates low.
Yeah.
Because but they kept basically just screwed in. The economy up, so everyone was out of a job, basically.
Oh,
so,
look, I mean, I remember
interest rates
at the time when I got married. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ben will probably remember as well. When I was getting married, I think I knew people who were buying houses, and like that, 14% was the rate.
Yeah.
It was mental. And people were, there was actually queues forming outside right. show houses, yeah. right? Get this. Now, we already knew, I mean, because I was in the building and I already knew I had built and been on building sites where there was thousands of houses all around the country. There was no way there was a shortage. And every time you come to a show house on a Sunday, there was queues halfway down the yeah. street. People were
buying. You couldn't get parking.
People were signing up for houses that they hadn't even seen. They were buying them off the plans. Do you remember that?
That's right, yeah, buying off the plans, yeah.
Hadn't even seen the bloody things. Oh, it was ludicrous. It was absolutely crazy. Listen, we've about, just so you know, about 7 minutes to go. A couple of questions come in. Sorry, guys, I didn't get to all the questions because there was a lot of jibber-jabbering going on, as they say. I've missed half the questions on the chat box.
There was a lot of learning here tonight, lads. That's what there was.
Huh?
There was a lot of learning here tonight, Ben.
A lot of good learning.
There's no doubt about it.
Okay, Tour Time Lucky says Uniquely. There you go. I'll go to Uniquely's question, Tour Time Lucky. Sorry, guys, the questions were flying up. Seeing as we're chatting about obligations, can Ben and guests answer this one? In the 1937 preamble, it states, "We the people of Eire, humbly acknowledging all our obligations to our divine Lord Jesus Christ." What obligations are those then? Well, I could answer that very simply. Well, Ben, if you want to take it, or anybody else, go ahead.
I'll let you take that one, Ben. I don't want to offend anyone.
Okay, I'm happy to take it. Unrest, Ray, do you want to pitch in?
Well, look at. I didn't sign it for starters, okay?
I knew that was coming.
I have evidence you signed them. What are you talking about?
I knew it. Well, again, what I'd say is the preamble, folks, the preamble is known as the prayer of the Constitution. A lot of people don't know that. In 1966 and into 67, the Law Reform Commission tried their damnedest to get rid of the preamble, claiming somehow it wasn't part of the Constitution. I think there's a move on again at the moment. They're trying to get rid of that, because that's a big stumbling block for them. But because it says in there, the last lines of the preamble are, "We give to ourselves this do hereby adopt an act and give to ourselves this constitution." And you see, if they take that away, then we don't have a constitution at all, you see. That's the issue they have there. So they're kind
of... Not only that, because it's the preamble, the rest then is for citizens, you know, the preamble.
Yeah, this is effectively...
Most people want to stay out on the preamble, by the way. You know, you don't want to get in under the constitution.
I keep
you want to be one
that.
Of the people, not one of the citizens.
Well, the preamble is for... That's why when a refugee or as an asylum seeker or any of these guys from anywhere on the planet comes to Ireland... This is the bit that protects them.
But that's right. They say, well, we're one of the people. We adopt that for ourselves. Then why do I have every protection under it?
It's we the people of Earth, you see.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right? Whereas from all the acts, that's for everybody who takes an oath to enter into a duty, obligation, whatever, under the acts of the Constitution. So it's different. But when he's talking about who sustained our fathers through the centuries, blah, 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 and the question that Lee is asking there is, because it's in the preamble, Lee, that's up to you to determine. That's the answer. It's up to, because that's what the preamble is all about. And you see, obligation.
Unlike Higgins, Ben, when he was taking office, it wasn't up to him.
No.
He it's in the law. If he's going in under that, he must take the oath. So he's not out on the preamble.
No, he can't be.
You can't.
Don't you see oaths as a form of coercion, though?
Well, they are, but this is what I'm saying, Vin, but they are, but they're voluntary, you see. And he volunteered.
He said, "I want to be president."
He said he wanted to do it, right? So
yeah, he put his hand up. Now, unfortunately, he wasn't standing at the seat at the time, so nobody seen it. So.
Stop that, Gilroy.
Jeez, there'll
be another court case tomorrow.
You
He's referring there being to his diminutive. He's referring to the president's diminutive statue. Let's just say he's not the tallest.
He's vertically challenged. And listen, I'm not saying he's mini me, right? Oh, but God. You never see them together, Vin. Have you ever seen them together? Now that's all I'm saying out there, okay?
That's it now. Yeah, PIR will be getting armed raids at 3 a.m.
We're getting closed off now, and that's the end of it. Ben, you just invite Gilroy on. You'll be shut down in 2 weeks.
Just call out your name and address there again for us, will you?
Yes, it's Val Brigham.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, look, you have to have fun. I'm sure he has a sense of humour.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry.
You can't be that size and not have a sense of humour.
No.
I mean, could you imagine somebody saying something to him and he said, you're a bit short. Me? Short? Nobody's ever said that before.
What's this? Harry used to call him. Harry. Harry from We the People used to call him Stuart Little. But he meant it in a nice way.
Yeah, but Stuart Little started giving out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look. All right. Serious. We have to round off. Okay. Cancel the Cabal is up next, folks. Don't go away if you want more chit-chat on People's Internet Radio. Stephen Roberts live account. I don't know who his guest is next. But before we go, can we round up Ray Hall? Well, so what time are you in tomorrow, Ray? Or what's your plans for tomorrow, just before we go?
I'll be up in Dublin early in the morning. I mean, I'll be up at 11, yeah?
Okay. Yeah. And look, what I'm going to say to you is, I mean, you're an amazing man. Your wife should be delighted she married you. And,
yeah.
You know, no, seriously. And, you know, you're a fighter. And I think you'll do your family proud and yourself proud tomorrow. And us by extension and Ben and all the lads. And, I mean, this is the roof over your head we're talking about here. This constitution, whether people despise it or otherwise, it's still there for them, for those who may come afterwards. It's still, as I said, if it protects somebody who just got off a plane from Gibraltar, Japan, or America, or wherever, it's for you too, in that regard.
I do agree. People say that the courts don't uphold the Constitution. I think they do, but they may, like, the lower courts, not so much. They are certainly aware that it's there, but, like, you have
they
to
They try to
it,
stretch it like it's made of feckin' elastic. They try to treat it like it's a piece of elastic, that they can stretch it. But they can stretch it, and they will stretch it, but they can't stretch it to the point of breaking. If they break it, there's a problem, and they know it.
Yeah.
And listen,
but like, there is a way to use it, Ben made me very aware of that recently. There's a proper way to use it, and thank him for that as well. Because, like, I said it before, Ben should be teaching.
Well, he's doing it right now.
Ben had 10 students. He could do an awful lot of good for an awful lot of people.
Yeah, but again, he's got to keep the lights on like everyone else. So, and I want people to bear that in mind.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. Just on that, Ben, again, as always, a pleasure. It's a business doing pleasure with you, isn't that what you say?
Yeah. Well, look, it's been fun. I always say to people, look, try to have a bit of fun with this too, you know. Yeah. Humour disarms the people against you as well.
Yeah.
Ray, I wish you all the best tomorrow. I worked hard on the affidavit for you in just the short time we had. I'm in Port Leash in the morning, and then Claire Knowles is in court on Tuesday morning. I'll be with her and hope she turns out well as well.
All the best to Claire. Claire again. Claire has done a lot of great work for a lot of people. She's helped so many.
Great lady.
Yeah.
That's in the High Court in Dublin in front of the Master.
And look, Vin James, again, Vin, always appreciate your inputs, my friend. It's great to have another intelligent head on the radio. I'm not stuck with these two feckers half the time. But anyway. So listen, I'm going to round up. I'm going to say goodnight, guys. Thanks very much for calling in. I'll talk to you again
next
Sunday.
See you, Vin. The other Vin, I meant. See you, Ray.
I'll see you, Ben. I'll talk to you.
See you, Vin. And I hope I wasn't too harsh on you, Vin, in our little role play.
Oh, listen, we're not done yet, folks. Talk to you all again. I'm going to finish with a bit of Johnny Cash. As always, Ring of Fire. We have to, right?
Love it.
Yeah.
Good night. God bless, folks.